I love Freddie Anderson. The one thing he didn't do very well was play hurt. He was one of these guys that has to feel perfect to play well. And I think that's what happened just before he took this little hiatus, is he was playing hurt, but he wasn't mentally comfortable with that whole thought.
The Lakers will take it over center and dribble out the clock. A valiant comeback makes it respectable, but the Raptors still fall short. The LA Lakers defeat the Toronto Raptors at Amalie Arena in Tampa, 110-101.
0-2 the count on Telez. And this one is lifted to left. Dahl is there. And that will be the ball game. Kennedy gets the save. And the Rangers even up the series with a 7-4 win as the Blue Jays drop to 3-2 on the young season.
Well, I don't think we need to waste any time getting to analysis of last night's Blue Jays game, do we?
Roark's been getting his tits lit.
Yeah.
I have never seen people jump over all over a player in our city this bad ever. I have never seen it ever.
What?
People are ready to ship Roark out right now. Not another game. Not another pitch. I don't think I've ever seen it. I've never seen the hate for a player in this city.
The hate?
Like I did yesterday.
Are you living in the deepest, corners of Blue Jays Twitter? Like, where are you?
It's everything. It's text messages I'm getting. It's Twitter. It's watching people talk about them, different analysts. There's just no, everyone's done with Roark already. Guys pitched one game. I know it wasn't pretty, but it was one game.
It was one game.
Yeah.
After a lot of games last year. I think that's the caveat. That's the sentence finisher right there. The near 7 ERA that he had last year. Here's what I saw last night. You tell me if I'm wrong, and we'll have Dan Shulman on later. Adnan Verkel jump into the conversation. Hewell chime in, all of it. But Tanner Roark, with his fastball, is throwing 90-92, which is not an issue. I mean, you can work with that. Hyunjin Ryu tops out at about 91. The problem is, Ziggy, is there is no life on the pitch. It doesn't fade away from left-handed hitters. It doesn't cut into left-handed hitters. It doesn't have upward run, like a four-seam fastball, an upward run to it. It doesn't have sink to it. It's knock, knock, knock. I'm the pizza delivery guy. I'm handing you a meat lover's. Crush it. And we saw the Texas Rangers turn them around three times in three innings last night. I mean, Keith Hernandez is a heavy smoker.
Roark's been getting his tits lit.
Five Paul Malls in three innings, five earned runs in three innings. You prorate that over nine innings, 15 Paul Malls. His ERA is 15 after the game. 15 Paul Malls. You smoke 15 consecutive Paul Malls, you're addicted, pal. You go from non-smoker to smoker. Tanner Roark got us hooked on Paul Malls last night. It was ugly.
Well, while the group chat had him as a serviceable starter that could win a playoff game, and I don't know where we've gone from there, but we haven't been taught. He hasn't been part of the group chat to start the season off. I got a couple group chat messages yesterday. Yeah, he's a veteran guy that you were hoping could, you know, squeeze out the odd win deeper in the rotation. But after last night, it's tough to see a future with this Jays team. Like, if they want to get to where they want to go, Roark's not going to be part of the plans. If we see what we did last night, it's the home runs. Like, you can say all you want. Three home runs in three innings. I gave up 14 home runs over 47 innings last year.
It's bad.
And that's just, it's those three home runs that were crushing. The bullpen was good, though, right? Malone came in, thought he looked great. He's an innings eater, and if he does that, we'll see a lot more of him. Not a big name, wasn't a big signing, but those are the kinds of, innings they need from guys out of the bullpen.
He kept them in the game.
Well, that's what you want out of them, right? That's all you can ask for yesterday. Like, that's a blowout game where they should have zero chance, but they're somehow in it right to the end. I mean, it was bad, right? 5-1, you figure it's over, but they stayed in it. That's what I like. They don't give up. You got a starter that goes in, doesn't have a good night, and you still have a chance to kind of win that. Well, I know 7-4 doesn't look good, but
I'll tell you what I saw. It is what we expect, and you're not going to win every night. And that's, we got to remember that. And baseball is such a slog. And if you win 3 out of every 5 games you play, that's 60% of your season. You're going to the playoffs. So if you look at it in 5-game chunks and say, let's win 3 out of every 5 games we play, you're going to be fine at the end of the year. But setting that aside, Ziggy, like, Tommy Malone is a guy who's not going to spend all year here. There inevitably will be a need to get one of the young pitchers up, and he is somebody who will ride the bus, so to speak, to the taxi squad and back, to the taxi squad and back as needed. He's exactly what you said, an 85-mile-an-hour throwing innings eater. He did his job last night, giving up just the 1 run in the 3 innings. What I liked, and Bo Bichette had a lot to do with it because he hit a couple of home runs, a 2-run shot, and then later a solo shot. He gets his first 2 home runs of the season. So he's off that schneid. Not that it 4 games is not a slump to go homerless, but he's feeling better about himself because his buddies Vladdy and Cavan each got their first home runs of the season a little bit earlier. He's off the schneid. They were in the game. They're not going to win the game every night, but last night was a reminder, if we needed it, that this team has the offensive capability to stay in a baseball game or to claw its way back if its pitching can hold the fort. Tanner Roark gave up 5 runs in 3 innings. You give up 2 the rest of the way. You claw back. Maybe you're going to win a game or two like that over the course of the season. And that's really just it. The bats actually haven't come around yet. Randall Grichuk's been red hot.
My boy Randall.
We've seen it. What, was there an echo in the room?
My boy Randall.
Whoa.
Yeah, we're gonna save that clip. Yeah. I'm getting the Randall jersey. That's the first one I'm getting. Sorry, I cut you off.
You're getting a Grichuk jersey.
Yeah, that's gonna.
You're
be
getting the powder
one,
blue. You're getting the white. You're getting the gray. You're getting the royal
all
blue. Which
colors?
One? Okay.
One of each. What do you mean?
I like it. Well, you don't have to get Grichuk on the back on all of them. You got Zygomanis on the royal blue. You got a self-named jersey. I know it's because you threw out a ceremonial first pitch, but you can't really walk down the street in a jersey with your own name on it. Yeah. You can't do that.
No, that's not a good look.
You wear it to the stadium, right? And then you're walking and you're in line to like go through the metal detector, and 2 people ahead of you, it's like Smith 14 on the back. And you're standing there as a lifelong Blue Jays follower, Blue Jays fan, going, when did a Smith ever wear 14?
Yeah, I'm
but
not
he didn't,
because
that guy's Smith. Don't I'm wear not, self-named jerseys.
No, not doing that.
Okay, so you're going to get your Grichuk. Your guy's red hot, but like we've seen it a bit from Semien, but not through the first 5 games. We've seen a lot of good from Vladdy. We've seen a spurt from Cavan, but generally he struggled. We've seen a spurt from Bo last night. Otherwise, he struggled. Like, this lineup hasn't pieced it together yet, and they've got a couple of deep holes, not the least of which is Rowdy Tellez at this point, but I expect that will be alleviated the moment, and it could be as early as tomorrow night. The moment George Springer is back, you throw Springer in the outfield, Grichuk's red hot, he keeps playing. That pushes Teoscar Hernandez to the DH spot, and Rowdy Tellez sits and waits for his next at-bats. I think that's how it has to be at this point, even though it makes you even more right-handed than you already are.
Well, Rowdy's struggling, right? He's guessing out there. I had a good training camp, right? That's the thing it's a little puzzling for Rowdy Tellez. I'm not sure if the pressure's gotten to him at all, where he sees a guy like Randall Grichuk come in, not supposed to be in the lineup, and all of a sudden he's red hot, Good defensively when he's in. And if you're Rowdy Tellez, you got Vlad at first, right? Who's looked way better than we all expected. And then you get a guy like Rowdy Tellez. He kind of gets, he's getting pinched. And I think you recognize that. Some guys that know what's going on, I feel like in situations like Rowdy, you're almost your worst enemy because you know what's happening. You can feel the pressure. You feel other guys. You feel that internal pressure. And sometimes it's not good for your game. Like when you start thinking about it and you know, like, okay, two more bad at bats, one average game, and I might not be in the lineup for 5-6. When you're trying to compete like that, it's almost impossible. It's like it's in your bones when you're trying to go out there and do something. And it's an awful feeling. And it's in every sport, right? You have guys on the bubble where you might be in, you might be out. You don't have a real place on the team yet. So I think if you're Rowdy now, I mean, what do you're waiting for your, he's going to wait for his opportunity again. Like once Springer is back, like you said, you can't take Randall out of the lineup. Vladdy's been great. You know, when you're Rowdy Tellez, you're coming into the season saying, okay, well, there's question marks around Vladdy at first. I'll be ready there. My bat's been good at training camp. I'm going to DH, but all of a sudden bat goes cold. Vlad looks good. Randall comes in. He's the odd man out right now.
Yep. I agree. I think that that's all true. And you can look at Grichuk and Tellez, who are two guys who stood, as you said, to be battling for playing time and how they've handled this. I think the advantage that Grichuk has is that he's got $50 million in the bank, right? He's in the middle of a $50 million contract. So he has established himself as a big league player. He's got his holes. He's got his imperfections, but he is a major league baseball player and he plays a consequential position. And I think he plays it well. I've always thought Randall is a pretty good outfielder. I say that seriously. Will this last? I don't know, because Randall Grichuk's thing is to perform in a way over a 2 or 3 week spurt, 2 to 3 times a year, that makes you go, oh my goodness, like this is it. And then he goes 4 for 45 with 17 strikeouts in that 45 at bat span, and it reverts back. The one thing I'm noticing with Randall is the willingness to go to the opposite field. A lot of his hits, Ziggy, the hero hit, the double in the top of the 10th inning on opening day, that was a knock off the right field wall. Couple of hits last night, hard hit balls to the right side of the diamond. And they talk about Dante Bichette, Bo's dad, and the work that he did with so many of the Jays players and how Grichuk last year benefited from Dante encouraging him to rethink some things and change his approach. It's paying off so far. But back to Rowdy, yes, I think that there's all of that. And I think when you are still a young player and you haven't quite established yourself, and that's who Rowdy Tellez is, he's still pre-arbitration. He's not making seven figures. He doesn't have X million in the bank. He has not established himself as a big league player. The pitchers have the book on him. Throw the fastball above the belt. He's going to chase and he can't catch up. And then you can keep him off balance by throwing your breaking stuff down and off the plate, preferably away. You can get him swinging over his shoe tops. He's got a hole up top, as Kevin Barker says, and a hole down below. And the most indicative thing, I thought he was having a pretty good at bat last night. He'd worked a count 3-0, the fifth or sixth inning, whatever it was. He gets a fastball outside corner and he rolls over on it and pulls it to the right side where Texas was into the shift and had three infielders on the right side of the diamond. Pulled a 3-0 pitch on the ground for an easy put out at first base. And that right there was everything for me. You'd worked the 3-0 count. Now you're sitting on one, maybe two hitter's pitches, your 3-0 pitch and your 3-1 pitch if you get there. And he swings at a heater outside corner and he rolls it over. I thought that right there tells you everything you need to know about where Rowdy is right now. Just nothing's going his way.
I'm not giving up on him, though. And when I see a player go through something like this early in the season, no matter what sport you play, getting out to a fast start is very important. The more veteran a guy is, they recognize that, right? And when it does happen, when things don't go well off the start, the best players they have an awareness for how to get their game back, how to find out what worked. Rowdy's just in one of those spots. It's early in his career where he has to figure stuff like this out. You're going to go through dry spells. It just looks bad when you start your season off so poorly statistically. Like when you look down at your stats when the season starts.
And a donut. Ugh.
And you see a donut. And you see donuts across the board. It's hard to dig yourself out of that. I think a guy like Rowdy, though, and his demeanor, where he is mentally for his age and how many years he's played, I think he's ahead of other guys in that sense where he doesn't have all the skill in the world. His position is not cemented on this team. He's trying to figure it out. Hasn't had the great start. I think something like this for him to go through is really going to say a lot about his character, right? And that if he can battle through something like this, he'll be better off, especially for a guy like Rowdy, where he is right now. You see stretches and guys will go through this, and Rowdy can either put his head down, get upset, you know, spend 10 hours a day in the cage trying to find his swing back, or, you know, he can go and he can make this part of something that he builds off of, right? And I just think he's that guy that's going to build off this. People are even writing Telez off saying, you know, he's not part of this team going forward. I mean, it's pretty harsh right now. A lot of the stuff I'm seeing with this Jays team is what I see with the Leafs. But maybe that's a good, hey, I said this about the Raptors too, and people are all over the Raptors last year. This is, you want the pressure. You want people to be hard on you and expect you to play well every night. This is part of being a championship team. And if we see this Jays team as a playoff team, I think it's fine to be tough on Tanner Roark or Rowdy Telez.
I agree. Here's the thing with Telez. You want him to get going because you want some left-handed pop in your lineup. Like Bichette's a right-handed hitter. Vladdy's a right-handed hitter. Semien's a right-handed hitter. George Springer is a right-handed hitter. Randall Grichuk is a right-handed hitter. Who am I forgetting? Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is a right-handed hitter. Like Kevin Biggio is a left-handed walk-taking machine. And if I could say just one thing for Kevin, brother, if you got a two-strike count, you're right. You're right, the umpire's wrong. Most of the time, you're right and the umpire's wrong when you take that close pitch and he rings you up. But you know what? It doesn't matter if you're right and the umpire's wrong. If the umpire's the one ringing you up, if the pitch is close with two strikes, offer at it, foul it off. Please don't take too many close called third strikes. I know you got a brilliant eye, but please. But Kevin is not a power hitter. Hit a home run on Monday in Texas, and he'll probably get 10 to 15 by the time that the season is over. Rowdy Telez is the guy in this lineup who can offer you some left-handed pop and who can offer you a break when he's going, a break in the lineup from the right-handedness. So, no, I would not write Rowdy Telez off just yet. There are some concerning signs. And part of it, Ziggy, is the fact that he didn't have a very good grapefruit league. Like, he got hurt late last year. It seemed like he'd figured some things out. He came back to Dunedin this year, and he didn't have much pop. He hit a bullet of a home run in the final Grapefruit League game in Philadelphia, and I thought to myself, maybe this is the driver for his confidence. Maybe this gets him feeling good about himself. But that's the last hit he had. He isn't just homerless. He is hitless so far. And when if you go 20 games at the start of an NHL season without a goal and you see a zero under your G line, that's not a lot of fun. He's standing up. Those big center field scoreboards are obvious. You're looking up and you're seeing .000 for your batting average. And it sticks out like a sore thumb. I agree. I think it's in his head right now.
Well, the thing is, if the consistency around Randall Grichuk obviously he's rolling right now and things are good, but I'm okay if Rowdy comes in through stretches of the season when, like, I don't mind using the Randall Grichuk, Rowdy Tellez, I guess, tandem when, you know, when one's playing, you know, you're hoping to squeeze everything you can get at him while things are going well. And when things go cold, you bring in Rowdy. I think having both of those guys on this team as depth guys I like that. I think that's great for when you have a winning team like this. This is what you want. You want depth. You want guys to produce. You want guys, you know, they need the offense. The thing about the season right now with the Jays is that the bats have been okay and not great, and they're supposed to have great bats, right? And they're 3-2 with a chance to come back to Dunedin 4-2.
With Ryu pitching today.
Yeah, with everything that's happened, you know, a lot of new faces. What are you going to get out of the kids? Is Vladdy going to be better? What's Rowdy going to do coming off of, you know, his training camp? Randall Grichuk, we know he's not even supposed to be playing, but he's now, Springer's injured. There's just so many question marks coming in. We don't know what the rotation's going to be. And they have a chance to go back 4-2 to start the season. I'm thrilled with the start. I'm thrilled with what I'm seeing right now. And that's because the bats haven't been great. And we've been expecting great bats, right, to lead up to the start of the season. It's been okay so far. But yeah, like I said, a chance to go home 4-2. This is it's what we wanted out of the Jays.
Tanner Roark, 5 earned runs in 3 innings. That means over 9 innings, he'd be allowing 15 home runs. The Keith Hernandez Paul Mall count for Tanner Roark.
Roark's been getting his tits lit.
Is 15. I wonder if Keith last night doing the Mets broadcast in Philly as the Mets were playing the Phillies, Marcus Stroman, by the way, started that game and won for New York. I wonder if Keith Hernandez was focused on the out-of-town scoreboard looking at the Blue Jays game so that he could offer a little Tanner Roark analysis. I hope he wasn't distracted by anything else.
Here's Dom Smith, who struck out in his first at-bat of the season. What is that sound?
That's me. Shane, sorry.
This is for, was that you?
Yes.
I thought that was coming from the ballpark. I was thinking, what is that?
I had the... don't go there. I could just...
Don't go where?
I got a slight emergency at home. That's what it is. That's
everything outside you okay?
Yeah, everything's fine, but I thought I had the iPad turned off. Obviously, I didn't. So...
Can we help in any way?
Someone was supposed to feed my cat, and she hasn't fed the cat in a while, and she used the wrong key, and it's jammed in the door. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house.
What tonight. Was that?
Keith Hernandez.
I mean, I heard it. I didn't hear the whole clip. I knew what happened last night, but I didn't hear the start of it.
Sounds to me like Keith has a female friend who was doing him a favor while he was on the road trip in Philadelphia, going to his house, feeding his cats. But she used the wrong key, and the key jammed in his door, and he wasn't sure at that point if he was going to be able to get into his...
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
I have a couple questions quick. Were those bells like one of those things that sit on a porch and they like kind of go in the wind? Was that one of those?
That must be the message, like the indication from the iPad that, hey, you've got a new email or a new message or whatever it is. That's what I'm guessing, that she was alerting him. So he hadn't turned the volume off on his iPad. So they're on the broadcast and he's...
Okay. That's what it sounded like. One of those, you know, those things with the like the prongs and they like blow in the wind on the porches.
Yes.
That's what
the wind chimes. Yeah,
the wind chimes.
I think you could hang with Keith wind Hernandez chimes. For 48 hours and not remember a lot of it.
Well, is he like, it must be serious. So that's the first thing, the question I had. The second thing is, why is his iPad on during a game? Like, what?
I think he forgot to turn it off. I think that's...
Come on. Like, that's a little minor league-ish.
Or he forgot to turn the volume down, right?
I think it's a little minor league. Sorry. I hate saying that about our buddy Keith. You think he people come up to him about the Rourke thing? Do you think that's
no doubt. That if I ever had the opportunity, if I ever had the opportunity to meet Keith Hernandez, the Mets come to Toronto and he's doing the broadcast.
What you're saying?
Well, I mean, at some point, I don't know. I'd probably say something. I'd probably introduce myself. We'd have 2 minutes of pleasant conversation. He'd be about done with it. I'd be all geeked up and want to tell him, like, by the way, thanks for the audio drop. We use it 1,000 times a year.
Rourke's been getting his tits lit.
I think we've already hit like 5 or 6 today. Yeah. So there you go. I hope Keith Hernandez's cat got fed, and I hope Keith Hernandez got into his house last night.
Yeah. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
He sounds like Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused. I don't know if I'm going to get my house tonight.
And like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get my house tonight.
I'm Keith Hernandez.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
Oh, maybe it was Elaine feeding his cats. Who knows? Adam Stanley coming up at 7:15 as we continue our RBC tee-up of the Masters, which gets underway at Augusta National tomorrow. Dan Schulman at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll talk about Rourke. We'll talk about Telez. Bo Bichette getting off the schneid last night. Coming up next, the trade deadline in the NHL is Monday. Taylor Hall didn't play for the Buffalo Sabres last night in anticipation of a trade. The Leafs' pursuit of a top 9 forward, of a depth defenseman, and or a goalie. Where does it sit? 5 days to the deadline. We deal with it next. Dan in Oshawa, Keith Hernandez better call Kramer to get the meat slicer. Somebody had a text that was pretty good about you wearing a Penguins jersey with your name on. I think it was Doug in Brantford. He's since texted again. See, when they double up on texts, then I have to go digging for it. Here
you
we
know,
go.
I already know what it is. You don't have to tell me. I already know. Okay. I already know what he's talking about.
Okay, well, it's Doug in Brantford. As ridiculous as your name being on the back of a jersey is it acceptable for Ziggy to be out in public with a Penguins jersey and Zigomanis on the back?
Yeah, he's talking about my cup party. I wore my jersey, so there was a number of reasons. One, I don't think anybody had a clue who I was at my Stanley Cup party, which is fine. I barely play. I get it. So that
was
the
one reason.
Yeah, but
you're allowed. You're allowed. You played on the team.
I know, but I'm just saying, it looks kind of weird. My Stanley Cup party, I wore my jersey. Guys don't typically wear their jersey. So many people at the start of it asked, do you have your jersey? Could you throw it on for the photo with the cup? So I put it on. And then the party was at Duchess in Markham, the Duchess Bar restaurant. So I had my party there and everyone kept saying, well, can you put your jersey on? I put it on, but it got kind of crazy that I had security there. I had about a half dozen people keeping things, you know, keeping control of things. And they said, hey, do you mind actually keeping your jersey on? It's easier to locate you and we need to find you for something, or there's an issue, or we need to move the cup. I said, sure. So I kept it on, and it ended up being, I guess, kind of a security feature. Cause I mean, thousands of people showed up in Markham, right? And it got crazy and it, you know, different parts of the day. But yeah, I don't wear my jersey out. That's what he's talking about. So you see pictures of me with my jersey on in Markham.
You're allowed.
It was from 2009.
You're allowed. You're allowed. You were on the team. I'm talking about you wearing a Blue Jays jersey. You walking down Bloor Street in a Blue Jays jersey with Zigomanis on the back. That's a red flag for me. I'm walking around with MacArthur on the back of a Blue Jays jersey down Yonge Street. Red flag.
I did a charity event and they gave me a hoodie and I was wearing it into the station. I was wearing it in, you know, into the studio. And I didn't even know my name was on the back till like, I probably wore it 12 times until somebody said something to me in the elevator, because I didn't know them, and they kind of they started a conversation with me, and I was like, how does this person? And then I don't know who it was, but they're like, well, your name's on the back of your sweater, and I said, my name's on the back of the sweater. I didn't know that they personalized our sweaters. So yeah, I mean it. That kind of stuff.
I mean, I think I'm only one step away though from wearing a jersey with my last name on the back, because I'm walking around in track pants every day. Well, that's the old Jerry Seinfeld thing, right? That's a sign you've given up if you're wearing track pants. I know you got a thing for the gray track pants.
If you're
wearing gray track pants, it's over.
You've given up.
White flag it. It's just yeah. Roger Nielsen, hockey stick, white yeah. towel on the end. Let everybody know you're not trying yeah. anymore. It's over.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like I'm a step away from my own last name on a jersey with the track pant deal. If I go jersey, my last name on it, tucked into track pants, that's when you know to wheelbarrow me out of this building and never to be seen again.
I want to see it one day. Actually, you know what? We might have to do a Randall Grichuk. We have the jersey. I might get one. And then you have to wear it every game that he gets a hit.
I think that I dislike Randall Grichuk way more than I dislike Randall Grichuk. I want to talk about this in a month. I want to talk about this in 6 to 8 weeks. And I want so badly to be wrong. I want to come to you and say, Ziggy, Grich is an all-star this year.
My boy Randall.
There you go.
You know what? I might get us two jerseys. We both wear the Grichuk jersey when he gets a hit the next day. We both have to wear it during the show.
Perfect. I'm more than happy to. There's no shame. I'm rooting for Randall Grichuk this year. I want Randall Grichuk's biggest booster on the show,
kind of, actually. I wouldn't mind having him on, having a couple of questions with him. Hey, Grich, you know Scotty. You know, first question of me. Hey, Grich.
So my co-host has this obsession with your career on base percentage, and it seems to bother the hell out of him. Do you mind talking about that?
You know I would do it in a second.
And you know me, and then I jump and go, Randall, I don't really mean it.
I don't really mean it at all, mostly.
I mean it. We'll get back into Grich. We'll get back into Tanner Roark. Bo Bichette got off the schneid last night. Maybe not the lead story in a loss, but certainly a positive sign. And the Blue Jays this afternoon on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and on Sportsnet will go for the series win in Texas. Hyunjin Ryu gets the ball for Toronto. Kyle Gibson for the Rangers. It's a 2:05 first pitch. Maple Leafs back in action tonight. So they're home against the Habs. No Carey Price, Siggy. Mm-hmm. Lower body injured. Didn't even make the trip for the one gamer to Toronto. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, well, injuries have been a part of him, right, for a while now. I think it's tough to live up to that contract, $10 million a year, and then all of a sudden you start mixing in the odd lower body injury and his back, his hips. Like, I mean, everything's gone wrong with him, right? I think it's played a big part in where his career is at. You take the injuries out. I know he had the bad groin issue for a while, and it's kind of lingered, throughout his career, but it's hard. It's a tough. We talk about Freddie Anderson and the fact that he's hurt, but this is all part of it. Your starting goaltender is going to go down at some point. Who's going to come and play? We're lucky we have Campbell that's come in and played excellent. Hutch has been good for the most part, but in Montreal now without Carey Price, I don't like their chances. I still think they have the toughest playoff team right now. I think going against the Canadiens. The fact that they added Eric Staal and he scored the overtime winner in his first game with the club, I think they're going to be a tough out. Obviously, if Price is in a net, it's going to change a lot of things. But you know, this is a time for Allen to go in there and kind of prove himself. Like I don't think he's done it this year. Like I don't think you can say Allen, if Price went down, we're more than happy with Allen. I don't think I'm there yet for the Canadians.
He's like the 1B in the 1A, 1B scenario. Yeah. And they're paying him to carry the load. But this is one of those times when you have a 1A, 1B, and one of those two goes down, the other guy needs to step up. And we'll see if Jake Allen can do that for Montreal. I think the Habs are safely into the playoffs, Siggy. I'm sure you saw it. Jake Virtanen got added to the Canucks COVID list last night. So he becomes the 17th confirmed player. Like there's other coaches and stuff. They're up near two dozen.
They're over 20.
Yeah, they're up near two dozen confirmed cases. So the fact that Virtanen is added yesterday means there was a positive test yesterday, which means that that further pushes the Canucks' return to the ice date back. And you got to get back on the ice for a few days before you can play. They're at least a week and probably closer to 2 weeks, all things going perfectly, from returning to the ice. So the question that, I mean, obviously human health is first and foremost, but the question that leads to is, how many games does Vancouver end up playing? Points percentage, etc. How there are going to be other teams who were supposed to, Winnipeg this week, were supposed to be playing Vancouver, who are going to end up short on games. The Leafs have a couple of dates with the Canucks in a week and a half or so. Like, how are they going to make this all work? Because the Canucks could be late April before they're able to play again, and this season is supposed to end the second week of May.
Well, what I wanted to talk about was, how many minimum games do you think would be acceptable this season? If you're going to play 56 games and you have the Canucks now out for 2-3 weeks, what's your number? Is it 50 games and then they go off points percentage?
Well, but that's when I start to have a problem. Like, let's just say the Montreal Canadiens are the fourth seed and the Vancouver Canucks are the fifth seed, and the Habs play 52 of 56 games, and the Canucks play 42 of 56 games. And if Vancouver made up all of the games that they were short on Montreal, the 10 games, and they won all of them, they'd get in and Montreal wouldn't. That would mean Vancouver is better on points percentage than the Habs. You can't keep Montreal out in a scenario like that.
I know, and this is what I'm kind of worried about.
Vancouver's not going 10-0 in those 10 games that they're short on Montreal, using that hypothetical example. Just wouldn't happen.
And the reason I'm saying that is, what happens if this lingers on 3 weeks? Like, the Canucks aren't getting out of this in 2 days. 17 players now, coaches, staff.
Well, and
this isn't just going to magically go away in 6 days.
And this isn't backdated to the start date, Ziggy. Jake Virtanen had a positive test as recently as Monday, probably yesterday, because he got added to the COVID-19 protocol list yesterday. So there's another infected player there, which restarts the clock.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I know we're sitting here talking about the season and you're probably listening there, well, isn't the players' health and their families? Yes, of course it is.
I said that off the top.
Concerned. Yeah, of course we're concerned, and obviously the health of the players and the staff and the coaching staff, that's the most important thing in all of this. But just in terms of the season and getting it done and making sure, you know, teams play enough games, where obviously points percentage is going to play a factor this year, but is 50 the cutoff? Like you said, what if Vancouver plays another 5 games only and they're sitting at 42 or 43 games and they get in by points percentage when you have Montreal Canadiens sitting in four? Like, what do you do then? What's the number? And I think that's going to be a tough situation, because we dealt with it last year. Remember the whole conversation on how it's going to finish? Is it points percentage? Who's going to get in? Is it the big market teams they're going to let in, the Chicago's and the Rangers, and how they had the play-in? All those questions are going to come up. And I don't think it's fair, but hey, we got a season this year. I think the NHL has done a good part, you know, and has done their part in all of this and making sure the season, you know, they did start and did get something in. They've done all they can do. It's not great where we're at right now, I think, just outside of sports in general. And where our province and country's at. This is, you know, it's been going on for, this pandemic's been here for over a year now. And there's just at times, and I don't know if I'm getting mentally drained at all, but it's just like, it doesn't seem like things are getting better. You know, the vaccine rollout and the lockdown, the shutdown, it just seems like we're in the same spot.
Well, the variant is screwing things up badly right now. And yes, I think the other thing, Ziggy, is we're all coming out of the winter, right? You can't just go sit out in the backyard in the middle of January for more than 30 seconds and feel comfortable. You can't get the fresh air that you want. So I think coming out of the darkest and coldest months of the year, hopefully we turn a corner here. I mean, that's and pro sports is a great distraction. I mean, I'm thankful the Jays are playing. I'm thankful the Leafs are playing. I'm thankful the Raptors are playing. Like, the NFL was really important in the fall. Something to look forward to on a Sunday. The days are all the same. It's just crushing that way.
The Leafs and Raptors have been great, but I'll be on the Jays playing has been, you know, you get an afternoon game mixed in. They play different times. They play night. They're playing almost every day. It's the Jays have been, the fact the baseball season started has been huge, and getting to watch the Jays, you know, almost every day. This is definitely a bright spot, and it's a distraction, and, you know, it's thankful Major League Baseball kind of got their thing, got things together.
Jays play at 2:00 this afternoon, right? And the weather in Texas is pretty good this time of year, but there's a roof over that stadium in case it's not. So you know the game is happening. It's a 2:00 start. Baseball is about a 3.5 hour per game sport now. That takes you to 5:30. Whip up some dinner, and boom, before you blink, the pregame show is on for Wednesday night hockey, and you got a little Leafs Habs. Like, that's
can't
your day.
Ask for anything more
that's
than
your
that.
Day. Like, thank God for it, right?
I mean, a couple W's and we'll be happy.
Exactly. We had some L's. We had some L's last night. Jays and Raps. We were feeling pretty good about ourselves after the weekend, and feeling pretty good yesterday morning after the Jays, Raps, and Leafs won on Monday. Well, sports humbles us. Need a couple of wins today. Ryu, I like it. No price for the Habs. Feeling pretty good. Leafs back home after a long road trip, though. Always, though, is that dangerous game, that first game back. Jeff Merrick will join us at 7:35. Adam Stanley at 7:20. Hugh jumps in for the panel. We'll play a little yay or nay, but today we're calling it maybe or maybe not, reintroducing an old favorite character from little more than a year ago. Taylor Hall didn't play for the Sabres last night, and they won. They won. How about that? Buffalo on a 2-game winning streak. We're getting close to the NHL trade deadline. Bruce Boudreau dropped some knowledge on us about Frederik Andersen on the program yesterday. We will replay that clip for you. OG Anunoby gets run in the Raptors game last night after a boss man slam to Dennis Schroeder.
What did you think? Then,
what did I think of what?
What did you think about the body slam? Like, honestly,
I thought it was nothing.
It
was nothing. I mean, the stuff with Harrell, it's just, look, he was pissed. He went up for the layup. He got hit pretty hard. He took exception.
Schroeder, right? Schroeder.
Yeah.
The thing about it is, I think OG thought he was still taking him out, like, after the play. Like, I think he thought he was trying to get in his face. But Schroeder was actually keeping OG up to make sure he didn't fall bad. So OG didn't know that. So he went around, and it was like, oh, yeah, you want to grab me? Watch what happens now when I lift your head over your head.
Yeah.
And you fall on your face. Like, it was harmless, but if I'm Schroeder, I don't think I would have been upset if a guy would have grabbed me from behind like that, but it was like nothing at the end.
Well, especially after you got swatted pretty hard going up for the bucket, right? So, and it's intensity, it's in the moment. It's tough loss for the Raptors too. I mean, if there's any moment when the Lakers are vulnerable, it's when they don't have LeBron and they don't have Anthony Davis.
But they don't have those two guys, and you got to be able to beat the Lakers.
Geez,
they don't have either of those.
Still think they got a shot at the playoffs. Man. And here's the funny thing: they're not wrong. I mean, they got to finish 10th to get into the play-in tournament. We'll talk a little more OG. We'll get back into the Tanner Roark experience: 5 earned runs in 3 innings. That was 5 Paul Malls in a 30-minute span.
Roark's been getting his tits lit.
Keith Hernandez last night. I hope his cat got fed. Hugh Burrell jumps in for the panel discussion. A little yay or nay, except today we're calling it maybe or maybe not Leafs and NHL trade deadline edition. That's next. a little yay or nay, but we're calling it maybe or maybe not today. We'll do that in just a second. But Ziggy and I want to come to your side here, Hugh, and help
you. My defense.
We didn't get to hear. We didn't get to hear from Tanner Roark in your update.
All right.
So we want a little analysis from the man himself on his work last night.
Nothing was working. Three home runs in three innings. It's not very good, so nothing was working.
Thank you.
Roark's been getting his tits lit.
Keith Hernandez.
Keith Hernandez, yes. Yeah, that's the clip I meant to play. Somebody asked him, what was working for you? In a game where he'd give up three home runs in three innings, it was chased. What was working for you?
Nothing.
Yeah.
You know.
Why ask that question?
Okay, but here's the thing with Tanner Roark. It's not, like, nobody cares that he throws 90 or 91. You can throw 90 or 91 in Major League Baseball, get people out. Hyunjin Ryu does it. We're going to see it this afternoon. Makes the second start of the season for the Blue Jays. It's not always about velocity. Somebody on this panel, Ziggy or Hugh, tell me what you saw any of his pitches do yesterday. They don't sink. They don't fade away from left-handers. They don't cut into left-handers. They don't have the four-seam rise on the fastball. There is no movement.
A lot of belt high ropes.
It is just, I mean, there are terms that baseball people use to describe those pitches that I can't use here on the morning show. But let's just say the pitches were sent where pitches like that get sent.
Yeah.
It was not Nate Lowe. You think Nate Lowe was fooled?
No.
Those two home runs he hit were rockets. Absolute ropes.
Yep. And
that can't happen. And look at all the deep fly ball outs. Yeah. Like I told you a couple weeks ago when Liam Hendricks was here, now one of the best relievers in baseball, but when Liam Hendricks was here as a starting pitcher in 2014, my nickname for him, I didn't actually walk up to him and say this because I'm a coward, but my nickname for him in the press box was 399 feet.
Yep.
Because the center field wall was 400 feet away. And there were a lot of outs that required every single foot on the good side of the fence. And that's what we saw last night of a lot of the outs that Roark did get.
So needless to say, very short leash on him.
Well, and Ziggy would know this, having played in the NHL, it kind of cross-pollinates all sports. At some point, if Tanner Roark continues to go out there, it's the front office trying to save face for their signing. And you know what? We're trying to win this year. Like, Alejandro Kirk made the team because you think he gives you a better chance to win as your 2 or 3 day a week catcher behind Danny Jansen than Reese McGuire does.
Also gives the Jays a chance to play that song every time he comes up.
Are you telling me that Tanner Roark gives the Toronto Blue Jays a better chance to win his turn in the rotation than Anthony Kay?
Anthony Kay, get him in.
Thomas,
that's my guy.
Thomas Hatch when Hatch gets healthy. Nate Pearson's going to be a 2 or 3 inning pitcher, I think. Jeff Blair was tweeting about this last night. I like the idea because you got to manage Pearson's innings of having him be a 2 or 3 inning starter for you, and then another bulk guy comes in behind. That's what Texas did last night with Dunning and Hearn. Like, it,
I don't want to
send Roark out there every 5 days and have him deliver pizzas.
I don't want to pull the trigger on him too quickly. It's one start. And I know you mentioned earlier, yes, but he had a bunch of bad starts last year too. I'd give him a couple more, see if he can work his way out of it. I think it's easy to do the easy thing and just get him out of there.
But this isn't just game one of his season, Hugh. This is last year.
He was great in spring training.
This is last year.
I know that doesn't mean anything, but he was great in spring training.
He gave up 14 home runs in 40-plus innings last year.
Well, what's the number for contracts to get rid of them? If I'm with you, Scotty. You sign a guy, 2 years, $24 million. What's the number? Like, how can you get rid of that in baseball?
But here's the thing. Here's the thing with Roark. It's a sunk cost. He's on the books for this year. You can't trade him. You can designate him for assignment, expose him to waivers. Nobody's going to touch him, right, for $12 million. It's a sunk cost. You, in recent years, and granted, the MO for those particular seasons different than this year's. You weren't, it wasn't that you weren't trying to win, it's that you weren't expecting to win. You weren't expecting to contend. This team paid Russell Martin to play for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He had 1 year left, $20 million, final year of his contract in 2019. The Jays paid 16 of it. The Dodgers picked up the final four because the Jays wanted to get rid of the backlog at catcher. They wanted their young Jansen to come up. They wanted the young guys to start playing. They paid Kendrys Morales in 2019 to play elsewhere. First in Oakland and then I think with the New York Yankees. They are still paying, and this is the last year that they will do so, but they are still paying Troy Tulowitzki, who is now a coach for the University of Texas men's baseball team. Right? He's on the dime for $14 million this year, on the tab for $14 million. So your player payroll is what your player payroll is. I believe they have a little bit of wiggle room to add leading up to the July trade deadline with where things are now. Remember, they didn't jump in on the Odorizzi's or the Taiwan Walkers, and there was some speculation that maybe they were keeping some money available for an in-season move for an ad if it's appropriate. And I think that this team will be in some kind of playoff chase, whether it's for the division or the wild card, come mid to late July. Tanner Roark is a sunk cost, and you can't send him out there every fifth day just to try to save face. If anything, it ends up making you look worse. Maybe he gets another start or two, but that's it. If things don't sufficiently improve, you cannot give up a laser beam home run once an inning.
He's not going to be out after one game. He's not going to be out after two. They're going to give him three or four games. You can't pay a guy $12 million and then one game get rid of him. I don't think it wasn't a good game for him.
No, I mean, if we're saying, you're right, Ziggy. If we're saying, oh, it's early for everybody else, then we've got to apply that same logic to
Tanner Roark. The issue is what he's done, the way he played last year. That's like, it's just like people put up with it last year, and it's almost like a last chance. Like, I get it. If it's three games, he goes 0 for 3, he gives up a couple home runs every game. Yeah, I'm going to give him three games. I think the leash is short. It got even shorter after last night. I think if he does the same thing the next time he's up, I really do. But what do you do? Like, my thing is, how do you bury a contract in the major league? Like, what's the best situation for the Jays?
You designate him for assignment. He refuses. He clears waivers. He refuses as a tenured veteran. He refuses an assignment to the minor leagues, and that renders him a free agent. You pay him out. That's how it would go.
That if it doesn't get any better, that's what's going to happen to him. But you're right. From a management standpoint, when you start buying guys out and you sign guys for $12 million and you can't even get five games out of them, yeah, there's going to be, you have to answer questions. And that's the hard part about professional sports. This happens all the time. This happens in every single sport. This happens. Roberto Luongo is getting paid $3 million a year in Vancouver. Like, he's still getting paid $3 million for the next 3 years. Like, those contracts in management, they'll ruin they ruin careers. I don't know with Tanner Roark at this point. They need more out of him. Last night can't happen again. If it does, he's probably down to a game or two. And, you know, I think the Jays have lost confidence in him. That's what it looks like.
Well, I'd be far more worked up if he had term beyond this year left on his deal, but he doesn't. So I think you can make it a sunk cost and just move ahead if he doesn't get it together here in the next couple of starts. I just don't see any indication in terms of his stuff and the lack of life on his stuff that he's going to piece it together. Adam Stanley coming up as we get you set for the Masters. Time for a little maybe or maybe not. We're changing the name of this today.
And now it's time for Yay or Nay with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So it's
big voice guy didn't get the memo last night?
Didn't get the memo.
Sleeping?
Well, we've got to keep Gotta keep the yay or nay alive, even though we're changing it to maybe or maybe not, in honor of in honor of Kyle Dubas, the Chinese farmer. You remember the little parable that he shared more than a year ago? We're getting close to the NHL trade deadline. So maybe is yes, and maybe not is...
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe. NHL trade deadline edition as it pertains to the Leafs. The Maple Leafs' desire for another top nine forward is legit. This Maple Leafs team must make an addition in order to make a run for the Stanley Cup. An addition up front. Maybe, maybe not, Ziggy.
Maybe. This is something they've talked about it a lot. They've thrown different names around. The only thing I want to see if they do make the move is not just a skilled guy. They have lots of skill up front. They need a little bit more Simmons Hyman in this lineup. That's kind of what they need. That's what will put them over the top. Tampa Bay did it last year. Coleman. That's just the kind of player they need. Like a Palmieri, Jenner, Foligno, one of those types of guys. I don't know if Taylor Hall or that high-end skill guy is the answer. I'm going to give it a maybe.
Maybe not. I've been saying this for a while now. I think the Leafs...
Maybe not.
I think the Leafs have enough firepower. I think if they are going to go get somebody, get that gritty kind of forward who doesn't necessarily score but is a great shutdown guy, or get a boring defenseman. I've been banging that drum for a while now. They don't need help scoring. That's not their issue. Come playoff time, they're going to have to play more of a shutdown game. Go after somebody like that.
Here's my worry with this team. The depth is... this a good hockey team.
It's very good.
But it... And maybe you could say this for teams around the league, but they aren't far away from having serious issues, lack of depth. I've talked a lot about how Sandin goes in if a Riley or a Muzzin or a Brody gets hurt, and then it's 2 degrees to Martin Marincin.
It's Marty time, baby.
We're seeing it with the goaltenders right now. Yeah. Austin Matthews, John Tavares, one of those two goes down. All of a sudden, you're really thin at center, especially if a Kerfoot goes out the door to make the money work on a somewhat blockbustery trade. Like, who knows? Is it Spezza? You got Thornton. Like, it's just, they're walking a thin line here.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of teams are doing it, but they're walking a thin line with their depth. I'm going to say maybe. I think they got to go get another top nine forward. All right. If given the option, I would rather have Nick Foligno on my team than Taylor Hall. Maybe or maybe not. Hugh.
Foligno. First of all, he's more durable than Taylor Hall.
So that's a maybe.
And it's backing up my earlier point. Oh, maybe. Yes, sorry. Maybe. Definitely. Definitely maybe. Just refer to my earlier point. I don't think they need that frontline scoring. They need more of that third, maybe second, third line stuff right now, if anything. And Foligno would be a perfect guy because he's got a little bit of that grit in his game.
Yeah, it's a maybe for me.
Maybe.
I don't know about Taylor Hall. I know they are asking for a first rounder for him. That's not going to happen. If they get a second, I'll be shocked and eat half of his salary. I just think it's when you add a player like that, you want a guy that's won, you want a guy that's gone the distance, you want a guy that's going to shake up your lineup a little bit. And I don't know if Taylor Hall's that player. Great skill, one of the all-time greatest players. Like, what's a weak part of his game? I don't know. The guy's tough. The guy can skate. The guy can shoot. Can score. He's a playmaker. But at the end of the day, it's what have you done late? Like, what have you done to win in your career? And the season they're having in Buffalo right now, it's been a disaster. I don't think Taylor Hall is the right guy for the Leafs.
And Taylor Hall is not playing right now. Didn't play last night. Yeah, they won without him last night. Hey, just another knock on his reputation. Hey, look, the Sabres have put together a winning streak. Covered Nick Foligno a little bit in Ottawa. Good guy.
Yep.
Good guy. Tough
good
player.
Guy.
He's a maybe
good
for me.
Good family guy.
Good family guy. Murray, kids. Good player.
Good man.
Good man. G-U-D, good. G-U-D, good. Sometimes you need to part with a solid prospect, and that includes, if necessary, Rasmus Sandin. Maybe, maybe not, Ziggy.
Oh, maybe not.
Maybe not.
I'd be careful giving out guys like Sandin or Robertson. Like, I know this is, you're going to have to give up something if they bring a guy back with, if they bring a guy in with some term left another year, and that's the guys that Dubas, you know, goes after. In saying that, the salary cap, they're up against it. It's flat again next year. We might see the idea of a rental might be okay with Leafs management. I just, getting rid of Sandin, he's the seventh defenseman right now. He's played one? He's played one game this year.
Yep.
He's a good depth guy. He's a guy that he's been out. I know he's battled an injury, but it's been over a month since he's played. He's the type of player, though, he could go into like game three in the playoffs and not play for 2 months. And I have no, I'm not worried about him. Or a guy like Marinson or whoever, whatever depth piece you have come in, I'd be kind of worried when guys don't get in any NHL action. So Rasmus Sandin, I like him. Just the fact that he can sit out for a long period of time and he'll come in and you won't see much rust on his game.
Maybe, because you're dealing in the here and now. And if you think your window is only a few years, it's only going to be open for a few years, make the deal, go for it right now. Don't worry about what might be in the future.
Maybe not, because if you think Rasmus Sandin is going to be a pillar on your back end for a decade, I don't think you part with him. I don't think you part with him at any and all costs.
All right, then.
Leading up to Monday's trade deadline. All right, Adam Stanley's Masters Report is brought to you by RBC. A Masters champion must rely on his knowledge of the storied Augusta National to win. With 150 years of insight and expertise, RBC sees things differently. Vijay Singh was seeing some things yesterday. I wrenched my back watching Bryson swing off the tee. I mean, that is one hell of like a little routine he goes through, Adam. I know we talked about Bryson a lot yesterday. That looks, as a diehard baseball fan, his swing off the tee looks almost more like a batter than a golfer. Like, it's almost on a horizontal plane at times.
It looks like he's sending one to deep center field, for sure.
Can you... Yeah, I mean, with DeChambeau... So what is the secret with DeChambeau right now? Because I know he's talking yesterday. He's like, yeah, I got something in the makes. You know, I got something cooking right now. Is it, did I hear this correctly? It's a 5-degree driver. Is that the rumor?
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing.
It's a 5-degree driver. That's it. And we had chatted about this yesterday, but the dude just got the driver put onto the United States Golf Association's conforming list. So every club has to go through, you know, the rigmarole, the scientific testing to say, like, yeah, this is fine. You can use this in competition. And, like, this club was just on that list on Monday. And now it's the day before the biggest tournament of the year, and he's going to put it in his bag. So he was super coy about the whole thing, I guess with reason. Who knows? This is kind of another one of those, oh, classic Bryson sort of moments. But, yeah, he's off just absolutely ripping heaters on the tournament practice area with this, you know, rocket launcher club that he's got. Now everyone's all interested in seeing what he's going to do tomorrow.
We saw McIlroy's comments after the players, I believe, right, where he said he's changed his game. You know, he saw what DeChambeau was doing, and I've actually gone out and tried to create more power, more swing speed, and his game's kind of unraveled. Do you think a lot of guys on tour look at him as not a bit of a joke, but like guys like Spieth and Thomas and DJ, they can't take him seriously, can they? Like they don't go by and they're not like buddies on the range. And you see, you know, a lot of guys are friends. I feel like DeChambeau's that one player on tour where guys aren't good friends. Like, he's not one of the boys, right? Do you not get that feeling too?
Yeah, that vibe is definitely something that he gives off. And it's kind of, it's interesting when you get into the team competitions as well, and there's not that many people that want to get paired with him, because there's just like an air of like, dude, this is too much. Like,
yeah.
Pump the brakes, you know? Like, golf is such a difficult game to begin with. And you are so, you know, you're always on the tipping point mentally when you're playing golf at this level. Like, forget about just teeing it up with your buddies, but when you're playing for a living, when you're playing the hardest courses in the world, when you're playing for millions of dollars, you have to have some level of focus. And you can't help but be slightly, and in some cases, aggressively distracted at what Bryson DeChambeau is doing. And okay, fine. Ha ha ha. Here he is doing his thing on the driving range. People will take a half a second and take a peek at it. But you're right. I don't think it's this grandiose, I want to hang out with this guy. There's a big, long list of people who want to play practice rounds with this dude. People want to play a practice round with him just to see what kind of craziness he's going to bring to the golf tournament in this particular week. But I don't think he's got a ton of friends.
Adam, we could talk about Bryson DeChambeau for hours and hours, but I'm not going to do that because the star every year at the Masters is the course itself. Everybody talks about how beautiful it is and how perfect it is this year. Some are saying it's the best shape they've ever seen it in, which is scary because putting is such, those greens are just ridiculous. So I want to ask you, aside from the big names, who does this course set up for best? And I'm not talking about like the first tier guys, I'm like Dustin and those guys. I'm talking about some of the surprise names who this course really fits.
So the golf course, Augusta National, is always the star. I mean, there is a pretty robust list of storylines this year, as there is every year. But the golf course, from what, you know, I've been told from Derek Ingram, who of course is Corey Connor's coach and is down there, he's not seen it play this fast in years. Same with McKenzie, and even Corey Connors said the same thing. Corey obviously just played in November, and he's like, there are so many spots in my yardage book that I'm going to need to reanalyze and change for this year because of how fast this golf course is playing. So because of that, it's going to really fit somebody who is an elite ball striker. So we've got, you know, Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas, and you know, you can go through the guys at the top of the list, but way out there in kind of that 100 to 1, 125 to 1, I really like Will Zalatoris. Will is a rookie on the PGA Tour. You know, he is considered kind of that next generation of just absolutely elite world-class ball striker. So I like Will Zalatoris a lot. You know, he's in that, like I said, three-digit, 100 to 1 sort of range. Kevin Kisner as well. I mean, that dude, I think, is 200 to 1. He's from South Carolina, you know, grew up 45 minutes, an hour from Augusta National, knows the vibe, knows the golf course super well, and he's got a bit of that bulldog, never fear sort of attitude. He's won the WGC match play a couple of years as well. So any of those off the board, you look at the strokes gained, tee to green stat, you try to cross-reference that with someone who's a half-decent putter, and that's the kind of golfer that's going to win and play well this week at Augusta, who is maybe outside of the favorites group.
Adam, we are up against the clock, so tomorrow morning, I mean, it's going to be bright and early. We'll get you on. We will make our picks. We'll go around the table, and we will revisit on Monday how we did. Ziggy has got the diesel truck horn going right here, pumping
picks.
His fist.
I always wait for the picks. I never know what is suggested on the show.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
We're going to make our picks tomorrow morning. So come with your homework. We get Hugh involved, Ziggy, me. I'll do a ton of homework today. And we'll I'll kick everybody's ass. Kick everybody's ass. I'll guarantee myself a victory. Look forward to it. Same time tomorrow,
amazing.
Pal.
Can't wait, guys.
Adam Stanley's Masters Report brought to you by RBC. A Masters champion must rely on his knowledge of the storied Augusta National to win. And with 150 years of insight and expertise, RBC sees things differently. Mike Camilleri, Toronto guy, ex-Hab at 7:50. Dan Schulman at the top of the hour. Up next, Jeff Merrick Wednesday night hockey, the NHL on Sportsnet. It's Leafs and Habs, the trade deadline just around the corner. Merrick on all of that coming up. Dan Schulman, Adnan Virk, all ahead on the program. Here he is, the host of Wednesday Night Hockey, the NHL on Sportsnet, the co-host of 31 Thoughts, the podcast, alongside Elliot Friedman. You hear him here on Sportsnet 590, the fan on Hockey Central at noon. And he is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Here is Jeff Merrick. There's actually room for you to speak now, Jeff, after I just listed off your resume. There you go.
Yeah, the business. Well, what I've found in my career, and good morning, Scotty. Good morning, Ziggy. What I've found in and Hugh, the one thing that I've found in my career is if you do enough little things all around the place, it makes it more difficult for them to fire you. It's like, you know what? It would affect too many departments. That's always been my career strategy. A little peek behind the curtain here, Scotty.
Okay.
If you do a lot in a lot of different, do a little in a lot of different departments, it makes it too challenging for them to say, you know what? Let's put some pink paper in the fax machine for Merrick.
Well, that's not bad. And I saw you vacuuming the floor one day.
Hand me a broom. I'll sweep up on the way out. Yeah,
Dustbuster out, just getting rid of all the spider webs in the nooks and crannies in the roof.
Freshen your coffee, ma'am.
There you go.
Anything I can do.
There you go. Okay, so Leafs and Habs tonight. I mean, this is a nice little Wednesday night tilt, and there's a lot going on here. Obviously, Carey Price hasn't made the trip. The bigger backdrop, Jeff, is the Vancouver Canucks situation. Jake Virtanen getting added to their COVID list, and while human health, like I feel like I need to put this disclaimer, I think we all do, out before we talk about anything else. Human health is the priority here and at the top of the list. Ziggy and I are wondering how the league is going to figure this out. Like, for example, if the Montreal Canadiens are the fourth place team, final playoff seed in the North Division, they have played, hypothetically, 52 of their 56 games at the end of the season. Vancouver's played 42 of their 56.
Yep.
And the Canucks have a better points percentage, which is to say that if they won all or most of those 10 games on the Habs that they haven't played yet, that they would get in over Montreal. How's the league going to figure all of that out?
Great question. Great question. And I wish I could give you an answer right now. At the beginning of the season, many of us looked at 56 games and looked at the situation right now with COVID, both here and stateside, and said, you know, for some of these teams, that's a pipe dream. Like, we don't think they're going to be able to get to the finish line of 56. We're going to have to come down to winning percentage here for at least some of the teams, and then by extension, maybe an entire division, dare we say, an entire league. This is one of the more complicated, like, there are a lot of complicated questions right now and conversations that are happening between the NHL and the Players Association. One of them involves the B word, and that's bubble, and that's something nobody wants. And the other is, how are we going to determine the standings here in a way that satisfies everybody? I don't know what they're going to do here. Like, that's not a very good talk radio answer for you, but I don't know, and I don't think a lot of other people know. Like, I could filibuster and try to talk my way into some explanation, but I just can't. We don't know what they're going to end up doing with this thing.
Yeah, and, like, again, things can change. But to me, Jeff, as I'm looking at it this morning, with the caveat things can change 3-4 weeks down the line, you've got four teams in the North Division right now who have fewer regulation time losses than wins, and you have the bottom three teams, Vancouver, Calgary, and Ottawa, who by, in two cases now, significant margins, Calgary and Ottawa, those three teams, Vancouver included, have more regulation time defeats than wins. Like, Montreal has lost more games than they've won, but nine of them have been in regulation and nine of them have been in extra time. They've been accruing points. To me, the demarcation point is obvious. It's beneath Montreal and above Vancouver.
Yeah, clearly. This is, an imperfect season, so I think we're going to get a lot of things, like much like our entire lives here. There's a lot of things that aren't going to make a whole lot of sense depending on your perspective here, and I don't think that the NHL is going to be much different when it comes time to making decisions on really tricky situations here. But I'm with you. There's those top four, and it's only a matter of how they end up, like how they finish. Like, listen, at the end of it, would you be surprised if Montreal and Edmonton switch spots here? Like, I know everyone's saying, all right, we're going to hand Toronto the first spot in the North Division. To me, the question is, are they facing Montreal or are they facing Edmonton? Like, I don't think it's a lock that Montreal, despite the injuries, are going to finish fourth in this thing.
So we know that it's looking like most divisions are going to have a team that doesn't finish, right? Obviously, Vancouver in the North. What minimum amount of games are you okay with? Like, if Vancouver... or say the Canadians don't finish their season, they play 52 games. Like, what's the minimum? Say Vancouver doesn't come back for 2 weeks. If they play 42, 43 games, would you be okay in a points percentage system that way?
Honestly, Ziggy, in a season like this, everyone's going to have a different answer. You know, to me, does 40 feel comfortable? Sure, I guess. 46, sure, I guess. I don't have a magic number for you. And I think everybody's number is going to be a little bit different. Some will say, oh, it's got to be 50 or it doesn't mean anything. No, it's got to be 40. It's a different type of season. This is so imperfect this season. And this situation in Vancouver right now is so horrible that, you know, the NHL is legitimately concerned that, you know, okay, it's one thing to happen to a non-playoff team in the regular season. What if it happens to a playoff team in the second round? Or in the first round, or whatever round. So I don't have a number. To me, 46 is comfortable. I mean, we've seen 48 game seasons in the NHL before, and we've looked at it and said, yeah, okay, so maybe the answer is 48, just based on historical precedent. But this is a season like no other, so I don't necessarily have a magic number in my head.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have one like you can?
Yeah, we were talking about today. Can, yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, I think anything, it's just going to be hard if you're a team in fourth and all of a sudden the fifth place team plays 42 games and they get in on points percentage. It's like, I just played 14 more games than you. Yeah. And you're in. What, like, those extra 14 games, anything can go wrong in a 56 game schedule. So that's, for me, is going to be a tough one. I don't mind the points percentage. Like, I was figuring teams are going to be playing between 51, 52, and 56, and it's going to come down to points percentage. Just, they're not going to be able to fit the whole season in. But if this Vancouver situation is not looking good at all, like, they're not coming back within the next week, right?
Nope.
And that's my thing, where then what do you do? How long can you prolong the season, right? What do they have, a week of wiggle room?
Like, my problem, Jeff, is pretend Montreal is at 52 games and Vancouver's at 42 games, right? Or Edmonton or whoever, right? Yeah. And Vancouver would need to go 9-1 in the 10 games that they would need to make up in order to catch or surpass, be it Montreal, be it Edmonton, or whoever. Well, on points percentage, they would be better. But are you telling me the Vancouver Canucks, with their current roster and the way that they have played this season, would be capable of going 9-1 in those games? Like, it's not impossible. It could be done. But it is so highly unlikely that you can't just say, well, Vancouver goes in because they have a better points percentage. That's my worry.
It's completely unlikely. And, you know, compounding all of this, what are these players going to be like if it's a, you know, 2 week layoff here or a 3 week layoff? You know, there is legitimate concern that some players might just say, like, I can't come back from this right now. Like, I'm questioning whether I want to come back here. After all of this, and what are these players going to be like? Like, how are they going to be on the ice? Like, we've seen, like, we all saw what happened with Pierre-Luc Dubois situation in Winnipeg after he was traded from the Columbus Blue Jackets and sat his quarantine and then came back and injured himself, sent a chill through every single general manager in Canada. And we realized, oof, I don't know that we want players sitting for 2 weeks. Well, these players aren't just sitting. You know, a lot of these players are getting healthy after catching COVID. What are they going to be like? How are they going to perform? are there going to be some players that say, eh, I don't know about this season? Will there be even, like, here's another one. Like, if you're, you know, pick your team, Edmonton, Winnipeg, even Toronto, would there be some teams that have misgivings about playing in BC right now?
Mm. Yeah. No, that's fair. And there might be some teams who have misgivings about playing in Toronto at this point too, just with what we're going through. It's such a tough situation, and all you can do, and we all agree, is hope for the very best for the Vancouver Canucks organization right now with Jeff Merrick. Jeff, Bruce Boudreau was on our program yesterday morning, yep. And of course he coached Frederick Anderson in Anaheim for a few seasons in the middle part of the last decade. We asked him about Freddie and this injury.
I love Freddie Anderson. The one thing he didn't do very well was play hurt. He was one of these guys that has to feel perfect to play well. And I think that's what happened just before he took this little hiatus, is he was playing hurt, but he wasn't mentally comfortable with that whole thought.
That's not a criticism. That's just a fact. It's firsthand now. It's, I think, something that had been sort of whispered around the league for a while. It reminds me of Dominic Hasek. I mean, different
100%,
different personalities, 100% Hasek, different yes. people handle things differently. My only concern as a guy who wants to rent the scaffolding on Highway 11 in Fort Francis for our socially distanced Stanley Cup parade in July is that if Freddie's not right and Jack's not right,
yeah.
There's a potential problem here. And not right doesn't mean you can't play. It just means that Freddie might not be mentally A-OK if he's physically not feeling 100%. And most guys aren't in May and June.
100%. And teams will always say, although, you know, goaltenders kind of get different treatment here. You know, there's an expectation that players will play hurt but never injured. And everyone's got a different definition of both. We've all heard this about Frederick Anderson, and you know, you can recall that when they made the deal for Jack Campbell specifically, I mean, that trade was after a miserable performance by Michael Hutchison, and Dubas pulled the trigger on the deal, and Frederick Anderson hadn't been on the ice in I don't know how many days, maybe even weeks at that point, and you know, the netminding in Toronto was struggling, and the day of the press conference, we saw the goalie reappear. Like, all of a sudden, we saw Frederick Anderson back on the ice, and a lot of people said, well, that's curious. Now that there's a little bit of pressure and a little bit of nudging by a goaltender that might take over the position, all of a sudden, Frederick Anderson is on the ice. And listen, this is why, and we saw this in the offseason, when the Toronto Maple Leafs tested the goalie market to see what was out there. And I would imagine Kyle Dubas is doing that now. Elliot Friedman and Chris Johnson have both reported this. That whether it's Linus Ullmark with the Buffalo Sabres, whether it's, you know, a phone call to the Arizona Coyotes, maybe it's something with Dave Riddick with the Calgary Flames. Like, there is a, I don't know how big the level of concern is, but there's at least a testing to see what's out there and what it would cost you to get it from the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, specifically Kyle Dubas, in advance of next Monday. So I don't think it would surprise anybody if come Monday, the Maple Leafs have another goalie and one forward.
A lot of times when you hear rumors with your team, players will either play better or you see some guys kind of curl into a shell a little bit where you don't see their regular game because more times than not, they want out. Example, Calgary Flames. But yeah. With this Leafs team 7-0-1 last eight, do you kind of think that the rumors have been starting? And, you know, every guy in the room, you know, when it's you could be one of the odd men out, or if you're a prospect, you could be, you know, the main piece in a trade. Do you think that might be the case with this Leafs team where all of a sudden all the rumors have been going around? They need another top nine and depth defense and another goaltender. And yeah. All of a sudden, guys just magically start playing better.
I think they know they don't want their chair removed. But I think that unlike last season, I think that Kyle Dubas is looking at this team, and we've seen this at trade deadlines, you know, before. And right now, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers are quite the opposite. I think the GM is looking at this team and saying, this team has done enough that they deserve something at trade deadline. Like, the Florida Panthers are going through the exact same thing right now. Like, Bill Zito, the GM of the Florida Panthers, looking at his team saying, this team deserves something. Like, they've, you know, exceeded expectations. Toronto Maple Leafs are tops in the Scotia North Division, and by winning percentage, they're amongst the elite in the NHL. I think everybody understands that the general manager is looking at this and saying, one, we have a shot at it, and two, this team deserves something for the stretch.
No saying today?
All people who generalize are idiots.
All right.
Scotty
can't do anything with that one.
I'm just going to write our technical producer, Josh Santos, a note. Josh, make sure the first segment of this show is not podcasted today. Thank you very much. There were some generalizations made about the Toronto Blue Jays, and I don't want to get myself. I don't want Jeff Merrick to hear it. Quite frankly, I don't want. That was very good. All people who generalize are idiots. Yeah. Sports talk radio.
Old William Blake line. Yeah,
yes,
I know. Right?
Exactly. Well, listen, pal. It'll be fun tonight. Leafs and Habs. Yeah. Always enjoyable. We love these chats. And who knows what we'll be talking about next week, because hey, listen, we'll be a day and a half past the trade deadline.
I wish I had better answers for you for what's going to happen here with the winning percentage situation and the points and the playoff spot. But really, no one really knows. I know it's bad talk radio, but I don't know. I don't think anyone does at this point.
Well, maybe we will have some more clarity a week from now. Thanks, pal. We'll be watching tonight.
Thanks, gents. Be well.
Jeff Merrick of Wednesday Night Hockey, Leafs and Habs tonight, Sportsnet. And he with Elliot Friedman, the co-host of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. Dan Schulman, Adnan Virk in the 8 o'clock hour. Former NHLer, former Montreal Canadian, Mike Camilleri on the other side. He was once traded during a hockey game from Montreal to Calgary. Coming up on the trade deadline, I'm just going to say, Cammy, tell us the story. Like, how you're sitting there, tell us the story. Tell us the story of how that all went down. Mike Camilleri, our buddy, next. But first, with a Sportsnet 590 The Fan traffic update. Got to remember to do my traffic throws, Ziggy. Yeah, you're laughing now. Here's Helena Bulka. I don't bat 1,000. I don't even bat 500. I'm the Tanner Rourke of traffic throws. Here's Tanner Rourke's analysis of my traffic throw.
It's not a good outing, not a good first start of the season overall. Just all over the place, getting behind guys, and I threw three innings as a starter, and that's it. So I mean, gave up 5 runs, so not very good at anything today.
Yeah, not very good at anything today. Not a good traffic throw. Not nothing. Not nothing.
I mean, with Rourke, just getting up there and doing that post game, nobody wants to do those ones.
No,
those are the ones you're just like, I'll talk tomorrow. Like, I can't deal with it right now. Like, there's no one more upset than him right now. Forget about all of us in the fan. Like, no one feels more bad than Rourke does.
This guy's got to have a story about some media he didn't want to do at some point.
Oh,
Mike Camilleri,
yes.
Former media NHLer. Stories. He is the co-founder and co-CEO of BioSteel. Played for the Habs from 09 to 2012. How many times, be real, Mike. I mean, we know you love coming on with us, getting up bright and early in the morning. But how many times as a player did you have a microphone in front of your face and go, oh, not today? But you grinded through it.
Good morning, guys. Yeah. I kind of like the mic, if I'm being candid and honest. Yeah, I was one of those guys who wanted to be heard. So I didn't hate it. There was times where you certainly weren't in the mood, but I think it has a lot to do with the personality of the player and where they're at in their life and what they want. And I was kind of one of those guys that didn't mind it for sure.
So, I mean, you were once traded during a hockey game. Can you just give us the personal firsthand account of how you find out, how that all goes down? I mean, the footage of you walking back to the dressing room, you're traded by Montreal to Calgary. We've seen it. What was that whole experience like now that it's years and years ago and you're looking back in hindsight?
Yeah, it was I'll tell the details I can tell.
Yes. Okay. hey, there's a statute of limitations, and it's like 8 years, and this was 9 years ago. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
There's some legalities. I mean, you know, we'll go golfing one day, and we'll tell a deeper version. But, yeah, so what happened was we were having a tough year in Montreal after a couple, you know, fun seasons. And we were after practice one day and getting undressed, and it was kind of a frustrating time. Things weren't going well for us. And I was talking to two members of the media who I have a lot of respect for, really, really good guys. And still do to this day. And, you know, kind of mics went off, which they're never off, but mics went off and we just were talking, which was not unusual for us. I just said something to them along the lines of, you know, feels like we're kind of like preparing mentally, like we're going to lose, like we're playing like losers. And it was kind of the same thing you've heard a billion times in sports. And there was another member of the media standing maybe 10 feet away that wasn't in the conversation. And so we then get on the plane and we fly to Boston, and I get to Boston and there's like people are coming up to me saying, you know, what was said or what was said. There was like a media kind of attention on what was being said. I guess it was reported in French language that something else was said. And so the GM, I was at dinner and the general manager called me and said, hey, you want, I need to meet you. And I said, no problem. So I went back to the hotel, went to his hotel room, and he's like, you know, so I said, well, you know, no problem. Like that's not a thing. None of that was said. So we'll adjust it tomorrow for the game in the locker room. And then, I said, but do you want to have like a conversation about like what some of my perspective is or point of view? He wasn't really interested, and I guess I gave it anyways. That led to me being traded the next night during the game. So the game itself, I was playing and came out. I can't remember the first or second intermission. Came out, and in Boston, the locker rooms, you walk out of one locker room where you're dressed in your hockey equipment, and then right across the hall there's a locker room where you would dress out of your, you know, street clothes and that sort of thing. So and you turn right out of the down the hallway to walk onto the ice. And so I walked out and gave, you know, Hal Gill the stick tap to the shin pads and was ready to turn right to walk on the ice, and the assistant coach was standing in the doorway of the other room, and he grabbed me by both shoulders and he pulled me in the room. And I played a lot of games against Ziggy. So my first thought was like, did I throw saucer pass up the middle? Did I turn one over? Like, what did I, you know, what did I do? Did I give another candid opinion to somebody on the bench that I don't remember saying?
Bad body language.
Yeah, I don't know if I was a body language guy, Zig. I was more of a say what was on my mind without filtering it type guy. I wasn't afraid to grab the marker once in a while. So then the GM was sitting in the room, Pierre Gauthier, and so he just looked at me and he just said, hey, I've traded you, and that's it. You can, you know, get unchanged and go back to the hotel. I can't tell you where, but, you know, we'll let you know. And that was it. And the kind of funny, well, I don't know if it's funny. I find it kind of, got to have humor and humility. Maybe I don't know if he would find it the same way, but the funny kind of circumstance that took place was, so then I had to go get unchanged and showered. Now the game's going on, so the only two people left are me and Pierre Gauthier. Now he's got his computer out on like this table in the middle of the room where our street clothes are and where the showers are. Well, there's showers on the other side too where we get unchanged. So I said to him, probably more comfortable if I go get showered on the other side, huh? And he's like, yeah, that'd be great. So I go to get showered on the other side, but all the stick trunks and the equipment trunks are in the shower, so I can't get in the shower. So now I got to come back and take a shower. He's sitting there in the middle of the locker room on his computer and his phone. And from my point of view, you know, he seemed pretty nervous about what had just taken place. Maybe he wasn't. It's just my perspective. And so anyhow, then I'm taking a shower. You know, I'm coming out of the shower nude. I'm getting changed 5 feet away from him, and all this is going on while I've been traded. So that was it. Then I went back to the hotel, and then one of my closest friends in hockey called me, Craig Conroy, who was the assistant GM in Calgary, and said, you're coming back, you're coming home. And I felt like one team really wanted me, and as you get traded, one team really wanted to get rid of you. So that was the story.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. I don't know what a typical trade deadline week before is like, and it's coming up here in a couple days. I just wanted some perspective in years you've dealt with it, or friends you've played with. Like, what are some of these Leaf players dealing with? Because we're hearing the rumors they want to add another top nine forward, they want to add another goaltender, want to add depth defense. What's that like there? I can't really talk to it because no team's ever wanted me, so I never knew what the trade, the whole 2 weeks up leading to the trade deadline was like.
I think it has a lot to do with your stature or where your perceived value is on your team, so and your circumstance. So, like, I remember being in Calgary 1 year, and we had a good team, and season was going really well for me, and I felt like, you know, I was in a really secure spot, so you're excited about, like, what ad is going to come in. Like, is it someone I'm going to play with that's going to, you know, enhance our game even more, or is it someone on the back end that's going to really solidify us? So you're kind of excited about the prospects of winning a Stanley Cup and what ad. And I think a lot of general managers probably feel that pressure when the team's in that situation to give the players, particularly the players who are going to stay and do feel that level of value, like the response that I went out and I did something to try and push us over the finish line. And then I think if you're not in that position of security, and your truth is maybe you're a little nervous about things, you're anxious, you're nervous. Is someone going to come in, and is that going to put me in the stands? Is this mean I'll get traded going back the other way as a throw-in, and I'm going to be on a last place team for the rest of the year? So it has a lot to do with kind of where you're at. And then if you're the team, I've been in this situation a lot, unfortunately, if you're the team that's selling, you know, again, it depends obviously where you are, contract status and all that, but it's kind of like, okay, what's happening now? Like, is it time to uproot and move my whole life? And so it really has a lot to depend on. It's very situational.
Last order of business, Masters weekend. Who are some of your favorites? And have you ever played the golf course?
And keep in mind, Mike, and we're with Mike Camilleri, I'm taking notes because we're making our picks tomorrow morning, so I might just copy yours if I think you're smart.
Thank you. Being smart and betting on sports probably doesn't correlate. But, it's hard not to pick the favorites coming to the Masters just because they always do so well and the guys with a little bit of history there. So Justin Thomas is my pick this year. I would say if we're going to go like an outlier or underdog pick that may surprise people, like a real surprise, maybe Bubba Watson. How about that?
Ooh, okay. Bubba Watson, 2-time winner. I still think Dustin Johnson's, I think he's going to repeat. I think the course is going to be a lot tougher, right? Every year that somebody goes low, they make it tougher, right? Tiger Woods, right? Back in, what was that, 90? I'm trying to remember the year where O'Meara won the year after. So 97 when Woods won with 18 under, they came back. It was -9. It just seems like every year somebody goes low, they tighten up the course. It's going to happen. And Dustin Johnson, I mean, it's 6 months ago, right? And he's kind of my favorite going back in. Have you played it?
Yeah. He won me the office Masters pool 6 months ago. So DJ is one of those guys. If he's feeling it that week, you know, heads up for sure. One of the tells for me in the Masters every year is who's moving the ball, who's controlling the ball really well both ways with their irons coming into greens, because you need to be able to manipulate the ball both ways coming into greens. And so even when Tiger won his last one, he was able to start laying off fades into greens that you hadn't seen him do in years. It's like, that's one of the tells for me is who's dialed. I have not played Augusta National.
Okay, well, when you get the invite, I'll be waiting for, you know, when you bring a guest.
You're going to have a stowaway. There you go. You're going to have a stowaway. Listen, well, Mike.
I invited Zig to golf with me, and he already said no once this year. So just let me know when I get on your list, Zig. I know you're a big celebrity now.
Yeah, it's a long list. Yeah, we'll get to you eventually.
Listen, okay, Mike, thanks, we appreciate buddy. The stories, pal. I mean, I know that some of those moments aren't so pleasant when you look back on them, but, hey, it's real life in pro sports. So good of you to share, and we'll do this again real soon. Thanks for picking up the phone when we called.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And no, it's probably the first time I ever told that story publicly, but I don't feel that way at all about it. For me, it's all part of the journey. So thanks for having me, guys. Have there a fantastic day.
All right. Mike Camilleri played in the NHL from 02 to 18. Good long career, almost 300 career regular season goals. He's the co-founder and co-CEO of BioSteel. Adnan Virk a little bit later on this hour. Dan Shulman coming up after a Blue Jays loss in Texas last night, and he's got a busy work day. 2:00 Eastern time, first pitch, Jays and Rangers, rubber match of the series. Hyunjin Ryu on the hump for Toronto. We'll get into that with Dan in just a little bit, but first, here's what we're talking about this morning on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Blue Jays 7-4. They fall in Texas last night. Tanner Roark, a tough start. 3 innings pitched, 5 earned runs, 3 home runs allowed. And it's leading to the discussion this early in the season about how long Roark will be able to hold on to his rotation spot. The Blue Jays and the Rangers, as I just said a minute ago, play the rubber match this afternoon of their series in Texas. It's a 2:00 first pitch. Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Hyunjin Ryu, makes his second start of the season for the Blue Jays. The Raptors were down 30-plus in the second quarter. They battled back to make it respectable. OG Anunoby ejected in the first quarter of the game after a confrontation with Montrezl Harrell. 110-101, the Raptors fall to the L.A. Lakers. The Raps are 2 games back of the Chicago Bulls for the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference, which is the last playoff spot for that 7-8-9 seed play-in tournament. The Leafs back in action tonight, winners of 4 in a row. They've got the Montreal Canadiens, who will not have Carey Price, at Scotiabank Arena. Here he is, Dan Shulman, the play-by-play voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet. All right, pal, always good to hear your voice. Let's start with the business of calling games remotely, which you did last year, but you had Buck beside you. The first 5 games in the books, it's looked terrific. It sounded terrific. How's it felt?
Well, thank you. And I would have bet anything. The first question would have been about Tanner Roark, but
I'm easing you in. You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
You know, just put a little butter on the toast and then bring the mallet later. That's the.
You got it. It's going well. The crew is amazing. They have given us, they have set everything up as well as it can be set up. So, but it is different. As you say, last year, Buck and I were in the same studio. This year, when it's me and Buck or me and Tabby, we are in different places. So, we're getting used to it. We both have a nice monitor set up, the same kind of situation we had last year to try to see everything that's going on in the field. But, Buck and I are using something called TalkBack, which you know what it is very well, obviously, but we can talk to each other without it going on the air. So, because we're not in the same room and we don't see each other, we don't see each other's faces. So a lot of times I'll finish a thought and I'll just say on TalkBack to Buck, done. Or do you have anything else? And he'll do the same with me. And that's how we're trying to avoid stepping on each other. It'll happen. It's unavoidable. I did it for college basketball in the winter for ESPN, and it's going to happen a few times. But, the big picture, we're just thrilled to be doing baseball games, right? So, things have to be different this year, but we'll still have fun doing ball games.
In a stunning development, I'm pivoting now to Tanner Roark. So as we'll see this afternoon, Dan, with Hyunjin Ryu, you can throw 91 and do very, very well. This is a velocity league, I get it, but not everybody has to throw 100. Tanner Roark throws in the low 90s with his fastball, but I don't see what that fastball does. It doesn't sink. It doesn't have run on it upward like a four-seamer. It doesn't fade to left-handed hitters. It doesn't cut in to left-handed hitters. It just sits in the middle of the plate, and it gets tonged. 3 home runs in 3 innings and some deep fly ball outs aside from that. I know it's just one start, but it goes back to last year. This is a rotation spot very much available, and maybe he gets another opportunity, maybe two, but if those opportunities look like last night, there won't be any beyond that.
Yeah, it's hard to say how they're going to look at it. And I don't know if you mean a demotion to the bullpen or a release. I'm not sure. You know, I think people who are clamoring for him to be released, I don't think that's realistic now. It is $12 million. And on the flip side, I totally understand, hey, this is a team that is supposed to be competing and contending, and you'd hate to miss the playoffs by one game and look back at four or five starts like this in April. But I do think he'll get another opportunity. The other thing is they don't have Nate Pearson. They don't have Robbie Ray. They don't have Thomas Hatch. They're short right now. Now, Robbie Ray should be back soon. And the first decision that'll be made is whose spot in the rotation is Robbie Ray getting? Is he getting Roarks? Is he getting Striplings? Or is he getting Zoiks? I don't think he's getting Zoiks. I think Zoik has earned another opportunity and will get another opportunity. But I think it's possible that he gets Striplings, that maybe they like Stripling more in a long relief role. But as I say that, you know, when Pearson went out, the first guy they put in there was Stripling. So I'm not sure what they're going to do, but hopefully Robbie Ray is back soon. But I got to believe, Scotty, that Tanner Roark's taking the ball Sunday against Shohei Ohtani and the Angels. I'd be surprised if that didn't happen, if he didn't get at least one more chance to make a start.
Ziggy's, we got to...
Oh, yeah, Mike.
There
my
we
guy.
Go. There we go.
Oh, was I on? Okay. Randall Grichuk with a couple hits yesterday. You know, eight hits, 16 at-bats. What have you seen out of him? And, you know, there's question marks on where he fit in, but with a strong start, he must be part of the plans going into the season, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I was never too caught up in, well, somebody's got to sit because stuff happens. Either guys get hurt or guys get a rest day or guys have a bad matchup. Or unfortunately right now for Rowdy Tellez, guys struggle. So there's always going to be something going on. And I hope Rowdy turns it around. Like I was all over. I'm buying what he's selling. I thought he got it last year. But, you know, he's certainly off to a difficult start this year. But Randall looks great. Randall looks like he did when he was in a really good groove last year. And maybe this is an oversimplification. But when I see guys hitting the ball the other way, and specifically in this case Randall, I think it's a great sign. Like fastball away, Randall Grichuk can line it hard to right field with the best of them. If he tries to pull everything, if he tries to hit everything 9 miles, that's when he can get in trouble sometimes. But a lot of hitters can. And I think he's done a great job. And I think he's done a great job, obviously, mentally, too. You know, when they get Springer, the guy who everybody said or a lot of people said would be most impacted could be Randall Grichuk. But obviously he came into camp with a good mindset saying, you know what? I'm going to prove to them that I deserve to be in the lineup every day. And you know, as the saying goes, though, the players make out the lineup, right? If Randall keeps hitting, Randall's going to play. If he keeps playing like this, he's not going to come out of the lineup. So, again, these things have a way of sorting themselves out, and there will be a lot of intrigue when George Springer comes back, which could be as early as tomorrow night, to see what the lineup looks like.
Right, and I think with Springer, I mean, the toughest thing you can do with an oblique or coming off an oblique, probably the most torque you put on your body is the swing of the bat. But if they did want to get George off his feet every few days upon his return here, you could DH him, you could put Randall in center field. Like, I like Randall as an outfielder, Dan. I think he does the job out there. Has he got plus range? Probably not in center field, but he gets the job done. And if he's out there and George is out there, you got Teoscar DHing, and then Rowdy's in a battle here for at-bats, which I think is a good thing, but I wonder if he's too deep into his own head right now. And I just wonder if that's in the back of his mind. I have got to have a two-hit night. I have got to hit a home run here soon. I have got to do this. I have got to do that, because Springer's arrival is within days. And if I don't do something right now, if I don't have a good night tonight or a good day tomorrow, then I'm going to be planted to the bench.
Yeah, that's harder for us to speculate. You know, in a normal year, I could walk into the clubhouse and ask Rowdy that, right? But we don't have that access, obviously, this year. He did hit two balls hard last night, but they both wound up finding gloves. And, you know, that's another sign you're going bad when you hit the ball hard and it finds a glove as opposed to blooping one in that drops for a base hit. But I would imagine he is feeling some pressure. And again, it's too bad. I thought he really built nicely last year and finished strong before the knee injury and was ready to come in and have a great year. But I don't think there's any scenario where he becomes a true bench guy, like a one-day-a-week kind of player. I just don't see it, because they're going to rest Gurriel occasionally. They're going to rest Vladdy occasionally. They're going to rest Biggio occasionally. And in a lot of these scenarios, then Rowdy would be in the lineup. So even at worst, I still think he plays 3-4 days a week, but he does have to start hitting. And everything is magnified at the beginning of the year. An 0 for 17 in July, or I'm not sure if it's 15, 6, whatever it is. An 0 for 15 in July is no worse than an 0 for 15 in April, but it looks worse in April, obviously, because you look up at the giant scoreboard in center field and all you see is 0-0-0. So I'm sure it is weighing on him from a number of levels, but I'm sure he's got people patting him on the back and saying, hey, like, it's okay. We believe in you and it's going to be fine. But on a bigger scale, assuming no guy is slumping badly, this is a good problem to have when you've got, you know, more good players than you can fit into the lineup. And I hope he figures it out, because he's a left-handed bat. They don't have many of those, and they could use his power and they could use that lefty bat in the middle of the lineup.
There's not too much to criticize with Vladdy at first. How would you, to start the season, how would you evaluate his performance so far?
Much better than last year. I've always thought first base was a much more difficult position than people made it out to be. It's not just catching the ball. It's a position that requires a lot of decision-making, more than most other positions. You know, he's clearly in better shape. That helps. But I still think he's learning the position. Once or twice, he probably stretched too early or stretched too much, as opposed to just coming off the bag and keeping the ball in front of you. And these are things that he's going to learn. By the same token, at times, Bichette and Biggio haven't made it easy on him, right? There have been a lot of tough throws over to first base where you'd rather them just hit him in the chest, but there hasn't been quite enough zip on the ball, so he's had to make tough decisions. But I would say significantly better than last year. He's never going to be Keith Hernandez or Don Mattingly over there. That's just not who he is. But if he can be an average defender at first base, then I think that's a big step forward from last year. And I would say so far, he's been an average performer. I think he's done some nice things well. He's made some good throws. His glove has been good. It's just, again, understanding as the ball's in flight, do I stretch now? Did I stretch too early? Do I come off the bag? Decision-making when the ball's on its way over to him.
With Dan Shulman on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. By the way, as many Keith Hernandez references as you want to make on this program are welcome.
Okay.
Just noted. Love Keith Hernandez. And another incident last night on the broadcast, Mets and Phillies. His iPad went off, and it was a warning from a friend of his who was taking care of his cat that she jammed a key in the door. And he wasn't going to be able to get into his house when he got home from Philly that night. It was a scene. You're going to have to check the highlights, and it was on Sportsnet Central.
I will, but look for it.
Hernandez at his best. Of course, the Tanner Roark thing is the famous one.
It's like he's a Seinfeld character, because, of course, he actually was a Seinfeld character. Yeah. So, you know,
you better check the third base coach. He's not waving you in. Elaine's awesome line. In terms of, and this is more of a discussion point from Monday's game in Texas, but it lives through the season, Dan, so it's worth talking about at any particular point. I mean, they lose yesterday. None of the big-name, high-leverage relievers get up, so it's an off day for them last night. They'll be available today, whether it's Romano, Merriweather. Baraki actually is a high-leverage guy and pitched last night, so I shouldn't say everybody. But in terms of Jordan Romano getting hot in the bottom of the ninth inning of what ended up being a 6-2 win on Monday, Brett Cecil, when he went from
Scotty, I'm not sure if it's on my end or your end. I'm losing you. I haven't heard the last question. Hear the last question.
Really? Can you hear me now?
Hot and cold. I heard Jordan Romano.
Okay, Jordan Romano. Are we good? I'll just keep going, and you cut in if you can't hear me. Jordan Romano warming up on Monday afternoon in a 5-run game, bottom of the ninth inning, ended up being a 4-run victory. Two hitters from the tying run possibly coming to the plate. Brett Cecil, when he went from a starter to a reliever, talked about taking a season to learn how to, quote, manage his bullets. Like, how you can't fire your bullets in the bullpen and expect to hang in over the course of a six-month season. How do the Blue Jays, how does Charlie Montoyo, and how do these relievers work to make sure that they don't overuse their arms even when they're not appearing in games?
Right. You're cutting in and out again and again. I apologize if it's on my end. But in terms of managing his bullets, and I hope you guys are hearing me, okay, so I don't think that was on Romano. He was one more base runner from coming into the game, whoever the last out was. If Dolis hadn't gotten that guy, Romano was in the game. 100% Romano was in the game. So if you're one batter from coming into the game, you've got to be airing it out in the bullpen. To me, the issue was Dolis. Dolis allowed two men to reach base, was throwing a lot of pitches. It was not the best version of Dolis. And if they were going to need another pitcher, it was going to be because the tying run was on deck. And that's pretty close to being a pressure cooker. So I don't blame Romano for airing it out. I don't blame Charlie or Pete or Matt Bushman or whoever it was for saying, hey, you got to get hot now. I think he was trying to ease into it. But when the second runner reached base, that's when he really started airing it out. And that's when, whether it's Dolis in that situation or a Tommy Malone yesterday, like sometimes in outs that don't appear to mean a whole lot because they can help you or hurt you the next day. So, you know, hopefully they don't have too many of those situations. I think they were just trying to get Dolis back on the beam again. But unfortunately, two base runners and a deep count to the fifth batter that he was facing, and they had to get Romano hot, and there was no way around it. So the good news is he didn't have to pitch yesterday, so he's, you know, theoretically ready to go and do whatever he needs to do today. But it is something to keep an eye on because load management and whatever you want to call it, it's going to be an ongoing topic all season long.
What have you made of the left side of the infield with Cavan and Bo? Have you liked both of their games and their arms so far, or is there some question marks there?
I think we're still, well, so two different situations because we've seen a lot more of Bo at short than we have of Biggio at third. I think the left side, the infield defense on the left side has been okay. I think Biggio's made some really nice plays. Remember the backhanded ground ball, step on third, throw to first, double play. Terrific play. Mm-hmm. But there have been a couple of plays maybe that should have been made that weren't made. And I think you could say the same for Bo Bichette. To me, this is an interesting year because it is without question a contending year, but I still maintain and will continue to maintain that the organization and the front office, they are still learning about these players. This is still an information gathering year as well. How good of a hitter is Vladdy? Can Biggio play third every day? What's Bo's defense like? Can Teoscar do what he did over 60, over 162 offensively, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the infield defense has been okay. And you know, those two could be there next year, or next year Bo could be at second base and Biggio could be a super utility guy who plays 5 days a week all over the field. I don't know. But this year I think they're pretty solid where they are. Like, I don't think anybody's in a week saying Simeon and Bo, you guys switch. That's not happening. I don't believe. So I think both players, I know both players work very hard and care very much and really, really, really want to be good defensively. But I think it's been okay so far. And hopefully over the course of the season, it takes a step forward. Again, I still don't think this is going to be a great defensive team. But if it can, just like I said about Vladdy, I'll say it about the whole team. If they can be an average defensive team, that is a huge step forward from where they were last year. So, you know, I know they're working on it. I know Luis Rivera's working with them on it. But there is room for improvement, I think, for both of them.
I don't know what it is, Dan, if it's a matter of taste or whatever. Like when Billy Wagner was throwing 100 and then when Aroldis Chapman came along and was throwing 100, they seemed to be outliers, exceptions rather than the rules, and there was a wow factor there. When I watch Hyunjin Ryu pitch, I mean, I'm taken back to a different time, and I just find myself, like, I truly enjoy watching Ryu throw a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
And he feels more like an outlier to the rule now, right? Because he's not a velocity guy. He's a location guy. He mixes speeds, keeps you off balance, can make you look silly way out in front, throwing an 82-mile-an-hour changeup after a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Like, I don't know what your taste is. Do you get a pleasure out of calling a Hyunjin Ryu well-pitched baseball game?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you can sit there on certain pitches and you can say to yourself, I know he's going to throw a changeup here. And the hitter knows he's going to throw a changeup here. And he throws a changeup and he still gets a swing and a miss because he sells it so well with his arm action and he locates it so well, say, down and away from a right-handed batter. I love, love, love watching his games. Now, there is something really cool to guys rearing back and throwing 100 as well. Like I'll tell you, I'm really enjoying the Julian Merriweather experience. And
he's
not just a, you know, he's not a thrower. He's a pitcher who throws 100. That's the crazy part about him. Got to keep him healthy. But yes, I do love watching Ryu because he'll bust the inside with a cutter, throw a changeup away, drop in a curveball when you're least expecting it. And then he might throw a two-strike four-seam fastball right down the middle, and he might freeze you because he's put so many other things in your head. You know, it's one of those, the other guys are playing checkers, he's playing chess, that old line. And that's who Hyunjin Ryu is. And to be successful, that's who he has to be. But he's great. He's great fun to watch. And, you know, how many guys are more important to their team than Hyunjin Ryu is among a contending team? I think you could make the case that Gerrit Cole is for the Yankees because they've got a lot of uncertainty in the rotation behind him. But I think Ryu is right up at the top of the list. Like, when we talk about all the uncertainty in the rotation, is this guy going to be good? Is this guy going to be healthy? It's almost like we're afraid to say what happens if something happens to Ryu. Like, we don't even want to have that conversation. So I think, firstly, I hope he stays healthy. I think he'll have a great year. But it wouldn't surprise me if you see the odd six-man rotation, if his innings, he's not going to go out and start throwing seven innings every start. If he gives them 180 really good innings this year, that would be fantastic. But to answer your question, yes, I love watching him pitch. I'm very excited for today's game. Texas has a lot of lefties in the lineup. That'll be interesting because normally Ryu will face like eight right-handed batters. It might be five right-handed batters today. We'll see what kind of a lineup Chris Woodward has. But it's always fun to call one of his games.
Yeah, and he's a changeup guy and he's a cutter guy.
Yeah.
And those aren't necessarily the two best pitches lefty on lefty from the pitcher's perspective. So how he attacks those Texas hitters will be fascinating to watch. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's not afraid to throw that changeup to lefties, though. He's like, you know, he's at the head of the class on that. So I expect we will still see it. Maybe not as often as to righties, but we'll still see it today.
And we know that Ryu will pitch against the Yankees. He'll miss the Angels series Thursday to Sunday, the four games, and then whether it's regular rest Monday or 5 days rest Tuesday, he'll get the start, one of the starts against New York next week. And we will talk to you after that, Dan. Always enjoy it. Thanks, pal.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
Dan Schulman, play-by-play voice of the Blue Jays on Sportsnet. Jays Rangers series finale rubber match. 2 o'clock Eastern Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now, something to chew on for great Canadian meat. Keith Hernandez, just a couple of years after the Tanner Roark analysis in the middle of a commercial of a New York Mets broadcast, something about his cat.
Someone was supposed to feed my cat, and she hasn't fed the cat in a while, and she used the wrong key on it. Jammed in the door. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
Oh, you're going to be in my house tonight. So Keith Hernandez is on the Mets broadcast in Philly last night. They're in Philadelphia. His iPad, which its volume had not been turned down, goes off. Bing, bing, bing. It's, as you said earlier, sounds like wind chimes, Ziggy. Sounds like wind chimes. So they start getting on him. Why is your iPad going off? Well, he's getting a warning from a friend of his who's been feeding his cat all week that she jammed a key in the door, and he's not going to be able to get into his house tonight.
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
Yeah, I didn't know he was the bigger thing is I didn't know he was a cat person.
He's a cat guy.
So I'm just wondering, does he keep his cat on a leash? Does he have the little cat holder in the front like that? That backpack that's in the front that holds your dog or your cat. Usually it's for a baby, but people put their pets in that when they go for a walk.
I'm telling you, Ziggy, if I didn't have the ability to get into my house because a key was jammed in the door, I don't know if my personality would handle it as chill as Keith Hernandez.
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight. It's all good, man. I'll just... Sleep out beauty, on the though. Sidewalk. Just an absolute king. And there's that great photo of him in the mid-80s with the Mets just blowing a Pall Mall in the dugout, right? Mets on offense just smoking a cigarette right in the middle of the game. It's like Len Dawson, the old Kansas City Chiefs quarterback from the first couple of Super Bowls, having a beer and a cigarette at halftime in the middle of the Super Bowl.
I've only seen one guy smoke prior to a practice. He wasn't on my team. We were in another city, and we pulled into the practice rink, and the guy was having a dart.
No name?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of his name. He actually played for the Leafs, 55.
Danny Markov. Yes.
I think he was having a cigarette. He was like out of the lineup or something, but he was just out there having
I love Danny Markov, and I was so disappointed when he got traded. That was the Robert Reichel trade, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. I think they got Robert Reichel. Reichel was an okay player for the Leafs. But Markov, he'd throw those hip checks, and he'd get you.
Yeah, it was tough to play against.
Loved having Danny Markov with the Leafs. Adnan Virk is coming up on the other side. Leafs in the NHL trade deadline just 5 days away. The Blue Jays off to a nice start. And a tough injury in Major League Baseball. Fernando Tatis out for a considerable period of time with a shoulder injury, but apparently they're going to try to treat it without surgery. All that and more with Adnan next. And Rangers rubber match of the series this afternoon, 2 o'clock, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Jays can get the win with Hyunjin Ryu pitching. They will go home to Dunedin with a 4-2 record. Good start to the season regardless. I think it's fair to say, right in the thick of things, you can play yourself out of something really early in a baseball season. Hanging around, though, gives you an opportunity to get on one of those runs. And I do think this Blue Jays team, Ziggy, has the offensive capability to take it on a 6, 7, 8, 9 game winning streak here at some point. They can hit the baseball. They haven't really put it all together yet. When they do, should be fun.
Yeah, it's not there yet. And we knew offensively this team would be tough to put up with. And we just haven't seen it yet. The defense has been good. Pitching has been good for the most part. I don't think you disagree with that. I think there's been some pleasant surprises both ways, but obviously Tanner Roark last night we thought would be better, but you know, Merriweather in the back end.
Thank you, Keith Hernandez.
Merriweather, you know, closing games out, emergence of Romano. There's so many positives from a pitching standpoint. I'm happy with where this team is at. The bats, they're going to wake up here sooner or later. It's spotty right now. Or, you know, whether it's, you know, not getting a hit the top of the order. Randall Grichuk's been hitting great, 8-for-16. It's just you don't know kind of what you're getting every game. And once everybody kind of gets their feet wet, gets rolling, yeah, I'm throwing together 6, 7, 8 wins in a row. It's not going to surprise me one bit.
Adnan Virk is with us from NHL Network, MLB Network. Ziggy wants to get a Randall Grichuk jersey. Should he go white, gray, traditional third blue or powder blue?
Powder blue is a no-brainer. I think that was the biggest hit of opening day. I mean, here in the States, everyone kept telling me, we're watching Blue Jays Yankees going, how about these uniforms? I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, the Jays have these. It's been a long time. We were thinking of, you know, Jimmy Key or Jim Acker wearing those jerseys.
Acker. Oh, that is a deep cut. I love it.
Exactly. Everyone's always going the easy George Bells, and we got to go a little harder. But I think that would look good on Ziggy. Listen, Grichuk's been a guy who I've been critical of in the past. I just think he strikes out too much, and I wasn't sure about the contract and boomer bust and all the rest of it. But say this, he's off to a great start. As Ziggy just mentioned, the numbers, 8-for-16. And this is why you have to have depth. George Springer unavailable at the start of the season. I thought once they signed Springer, okay, they'll trade Grichuk for some pitching help, but this is why it's important to keep him. And obviously, he's made me look bad by looking great right out of the gate. So go ahead, Ziggy, get your Grichuk jersey.
Yeah, I told Scotty if he has a hit in a game, we're both wearing the jersey the next day on air. So that's going to be our new thing going forward. Well, I just got to convince.
But the proviso for that is Ziggy's got to buy me a Grichuk jersey.
That's like, fine. I'm down
dude,
for that.
I'm Scottish with short arms. I am not reaching into my pocket to become Randall Grichuk jersey guy. Okay? It's just, it hits every angle of my neuroses. So if Ziggy wants to buy me a jersey, I'm good with it.
Scotty, would you ever go to the level of getting a MacArthur jersey, like Jay's jersey, but your last name on the back? When was the last? Have you ever done that? Because I have a couple of Vert jerseys as a kid, and I was made fun of. I thought that was kind of a cool look. Like, hey, I'm a member of the team. Look at me.
I did get a Blue Jays jersey with my last name on it, I think for my 10th birthday, and I wore it every now and then. I think it's okay if you're a kid. This conversation came up the first hour of the show. Like, can you be jersey guy with your own last name and your favorite number on the jersey, or you've got a favorite player and you put your name and his number on the back of a jersey?
I think you're right. As a kid, I mean, I definitely did that. I think I know others have done it, but
kids,
the reason I
kids
ask
are
is,
allowed adults
Yeah, adults is a little bit tougher. You see a 42-year-old man walking around McDougal. I didn't see you lining up for the Eagles last year. Who the hell are you?
Yes. Who's this McDougal fellow? There you go. Well, we're gonna get Grichuk jerseys as long as Ziggy pays for them, and we are gonna wave his flag this year. And I'm more than happy to do it. What do you make, generally speaking, of the Blue Jays so far? I mean, 5 games is an incredibly small sample size over 162. I think there's a lot to like there, and I don't think in any sense of the imagination have they put it all together yet.
Yeah, I agree, Scotty. Listen, to take 2 of 3 against the mighty Yankees right out of the gate was a great sign. You know, last year we know the schedule was backloaded in terms of the Jays and Yankees facing each other. This year, front-loaded, right out of the gate. We're getting a sense here of the two arguably best teams in the American League East, although the Tampa Bay Rays obviously have a lot to say about that. But the fact that game one, Hyun-Jin Ryu matched Garrett Cole, both went 5 1/3, both gave up 2 runs. I said, oh, that's a good sign. Your ace can match up with their ace. Simeon's been great, couple of home runs out of the gate. He feels out of place at second base, and that's, you know, he should actually be at shortstop, but obviously they're not moving Bo. So Biggio goes to third, Vlad goes to first. Fine. A little bit of musical chairs, but I think Simeon's been great. If he can get back to being who he was 2 years ago, if you can just say, you know what, 2020 was an aberration. It was a bad year. Javier Baez had a bad year. Nolan Arenado had a bad year. Francisco Lindor did not have a great 2020. Semien actually is the 2019 guy. You go, wow, for 1 year, $18 million, he could absolutely rake. And they've got the qualifying offer, so it could actually end up being like a 2-year, $36 million deal. So Semien and Grichuk standing out. Ryu, who obviously will pitch today, has looked good so far. I think the bullpen has turned a few heads, as Ziggy mentioned. People know about Romano, the Canadian, but Merriweather can sling it. I mean, he's got some serious velocity in his pitches, so he could be a key cog in that bullpen with Kirby Yates going down. I was listening to what Dan Schulman was saying, you guys. Yes, the Tanner Roark's of the world are going to be underwhelming, but one other guy who was great was Steven Matz. I mean, he pitched great the other day, and there's never been an issue, guys, about his talent or his stuff. It's his durability. Unfortunately, in New York, he was injury-prone, but there's no question he can be a really strong piece for them, and if he can be a number two or a number three up to Ryu, I thought that was a great sign the way Matz pitched the other day.
Going to ask you about our Toronto Maple Leafs. 7-0-1 last 8 games. Trade deadline coming up. Question marks in net. Question marks at depth up front. What do you want to see the Leafs do? Or are you happy with where they're at right now?
Well, I think goaltending, Jack Campbell's answered a lot. I mean, listen, the fact he's 9-0, when I saw, you know, longest winning streak by a goalie in Toronto history with Felix the Cat and Jacques Plante, I said, okay, it's pretty good. Now, I know it's, again, small sample size, but Campbell's looked awfully good, and hopefully Freddie comes back at some point. You can have a really good duel there to imagine who's going to be the number one. But I don't think they need much right now, Ziggy. I mean, Auston Matthews, he's leading the league, 27 goals. I saw the other night Spezza scored, Wayne Simmons scored. Those are those depth pieces. When those guys are contributing, that helps, you know, not put all the onus on the likes of Matthews and Tavares and Mitch Marner. So, listen, you can always use another depth piece of forward, as you mentioned. Trade deadline's going to be on April 12th. I'm sure Toronto's going to kick the tires, but I don't think a whole lot. You know, when you've won 7 of 8 games, you're rolling like this. I mean, I would be I would be remiss if I didn't point out just how good they're playing. Even their power play, which I noticed has been struggling recently. I said maybe they could use a power play specialist. They had a power play goal finally in that game and that win against the Calgary Flames. So good test against Montreal, who's playing better. Habs have won 3 of 4. Leafs have won 7 of 8. But I think Toronto's looking awfully good right now as they're kind of rounding into form, but 20 games left in the season.
I think we're all guilty of focusing a lot on our favorite teams and thinking that their issues or challenges or potential issues or challenges are specific to them and nobody else around whatever sport it is we're talking about. Like, I can sit here and say, my God, the Leafs are one defenseman's injury away from needing to rely on Rasmus Sandin to fill those minutes, two away from Marty Marincin. If Frederik Andersen isn't 100% and Jack Campbell isn't 100%, what if they both give out in the playoffs? They can worry about that. What happens if Austin Matthews or John Tavares gets hurt? Look at their centerman depth beneath that. Do they have enough? Do they like what they have right now? But that's true for anybody, right? I mean, health, so much of winning a Stanley Cup or winning a World Series trophy or winning a Super Bowl is about good fortune, luck, whatever you want to call it, Adnan, in terms of the health front and everything else. Like, it's just all got to fall into place.
100%, Scotty. And by example, you look at the Montreal Canadiens, the team that they're facing tonight. Now, the Habs have been playing better recently, but they're not going to have Carey Price tonight. Lower body injury, back injury. Not sure how serious that is. You could miss their next game against the Jets. Brendan Gallagher is going to be out, a guy who's been a good player for them. 23 points, 34 games. He's a guy that does a lot of good things for them. So you're right. I mean, if you had two more of those injuries to Montreal, you go, okay, they're done. And same thing for Toronto. If your star player goes down, we could go through each of them, right? All the teams. Edmonton, if it's McDavid or Draisaitl. Winnipeg, if it's Connor Hellebuck, because he shores up so many defensive inefficiencies for Winnipeg. I think what's notable, though, about tonight's game is this. For Toronto, they have realized that they've solidified their standing, and now it looks like, in all probability, they're going to be facing Montreal in the first round, because, as we know, for what a great rivalry it's been, that's never happened come playoff time, and the fact that Toronto, by virtue of the way that they've roughed up the Calgary Flames, you know, the Habs now have 8 points up on the Flames and the Canucks. So I think both those teams are going to be hard-pressed to catch Montreal. What's interesting about tonight is Toronto's won 3 of 4 against Montreal, and this could be a bellwether for what we end up seeing in the playoffs. So I think it'll be a fun game tonight for that reason.
Vancouver Canucks just had their 17th player enter the COVID protocol, and not sure when they're going to play their next game. We've been kind of talking about what the, you know, how many games would it take for a team to play if you don't get the full 56 in, right? We know it's going to come down to points percentage this year, but then we had the conversation on what's the minimum amount of games you'd want to see to fulfill a season. I kind of threw out, you know, anything around 50, 51, but for Vancouver Canucks, what if they only play another 5 games this year and are sitting in fifth but have a better points percentage than the Montreal Canadiens, who have played, you know, 14 more games? Is that fair?
No, it's not. It's a terrible situation, Ziggy. Obviously, the fact that the Canucks have been felled by this coronavirus variant is just awful news and terrible news, because it's just bad luck. And obviously, some of those guys have been in rough shape. Other guys hopefully haven't been as impacted. But this was always the biggest fear for any of these teams right now in the face of COVID, is how many games you're going to get in so that the season looks realistic. And if you'd asked me a month ago, I would have said, okay, other teams have been challenged. We know what happened with Dallas, for example. But the North Division is going to be good. Canada's done an excellent job of managing the virus, and so far no players have been impacted. And then it was, okay, the Canadians missed a couple of games. Fine, they're the first domino to fall. And now Vancouver, it's just been a horrible situation. But I don't even want to think about that, Ziggy, because I think it would feel awfully unfair. I'm with you. If it's 50-51, you go, okay, you know, you're at most of the season. I think a minimum of, let's say, 80% of the season. If you were at 46, 47 games, again, it's kind of tough to swallow, but you'd accept it. But if one team plays like 39 games and everybody else is around 56, that's going to be awfully tough to stomach. So it's horrible to say, but I think the best case scenario would be if obviously Vancouver gets back on the ice, but even so, if Montreal just plays really well and puts some distance between them and Vancouver, that hopefully becomes a moot point, because that would look like an awfully big blemish. Hey, we're going to get this team in here who played 20 less games because their points percentage is better. It would just look odd.
With Adnan Virk on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. One of the things you do, Adnan, is you co-host the GM Shuffle podcast with former NFL exec Michael Lombardi. And so you're on top of what's going on, as I call it, in the machine. The NFL is the machine. They always find a way to the front page, even in the middle of the off season. So the New York Jets trade Sam Darnold to Carolina, which gives away what we thought. And that is that the new coaching staff is going to draft a quarterback number two overall. Trevor Lawrence goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Who do you think the Jets are honing in on with that number two pick?
It's a no-brainer. They're going to go with Zach Wilson from BYU. Okay. And yeah. And I would have said, Scott, if you asked me again a little while ago, I would have said, you know what, build the draft. Just get your linemen going, right? Get some offensive linemen, defensive linemen. I'm big on, especially with the number two pick. Like, unless there's a quarterback you think is transcendent, like Trevor Lawrence, just beef up in the trenches and eventually you build around them. But the Jets, clearly Joe Douglas has said, you know what, they're swayed by Zach Wilson. They've fallen in love with him, and so they trade Sam Darnold. The Darnold return, by the way, is decent. I remember at one point last year, Adam Schefter was saying he might command a fourth and a seventh, and I said, that seems awfully low. Like, I remember Darnold at USC, and I know it hasn't worked out great for the Jets, but I think he shows promise. He turns it over too much, but I do think he has the makings of being a good NFL quarterback. So I thought that the return the Jets got was fair in that it's a sixth-round pick in this year's draft, but next year you get a second and a fourth. I'm like, okay, three picks for him. I think that's fair for a guy who still could be a really good quarterback. And a lot of this, as you know, Scotty, is financial. I mean, they basically came out and said, well, we're resetting it because by drafting a quarterback at number two, which is what they're going to do with Zach Wilson, the maximum the number two pick can get paid is, I think it's $35 million over 4 years. So all of a sudden they can use that money to go somewhere else, whereas Darnold was a year away from going into a fifth-year option. And then you have to decide, hey, are we paying him $12 million a year or are we cutting him loose? Look at what the Chicago Bears did with Trubisky. They've made the decision to move on. So it's interesting. It's not even just that they kind of fell out of love or fell out of favor with Darnold and that they like Zach Wilson. It's resetting the cap and saying, okay, we can save money on not paying the quarterback as much, who we believe has a greater upside than Darnold, and we can spend that money elsewhere. So intriguing move there by the Jets.
We'll talk next week, pal. Always fun. Thanks, Adnan.
Thanks, boys. And I love the Keith Hernandez clip. I mean, I'm with you, Scotty. I would not react that well if I could not get to my house.
Yeah.
I would be having serious agita. Like, well, I'm going to sleep outside. What are we doing here? All over a cat. Are you kidding? What's this cat, Garfield? Let's go.
My cat's not fed. I can't get in my house. And nothing, it all rolls off Keith Hernandez's back.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
Don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
Oh, God.
It's like he's auditioning for the reprised role of Matthew McConaughey's character in Dazed and Confused.
Does he not sound like he's in Dazed and Confused?
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
Yeah, well, I'll get some potato chips, though. Maybe a little bag of Ruffles will be all right.
All right. We'll talk next week, pal. Thanks.
Thanks, boys. Take care.
Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast. Blue Jays and Rangers, 2 o'clock this afternoon. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning to break it all down. Talk to you then.
And I don't know if I'm going to be able to get in my house tonight.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did. All right.